jury all come together to the honorable mighty judge. Okay. Where are we? Oh, yeah. And then we'll come back up here. Okay. Give me two bills. All right. Well, let's see. Wait a minute. We were in the business of third reading. We've got some members off the floor yet. So what we'll do is we'll start off with messages from the house.
February the 26, 2015, from the House of Representatives, message number 394, concurrence failed, Mr. President. House Bill number 180, child interview, neglect, and abuse cases. The House failed to concur on center amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 1, noes 57, excused 2. House requests the Senate appoint a conference committee number 1 to meet with a like committee from the House to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. From the House of Representatives, message number 392, concurrence failed. Mr. President, House Bill number 11, Distance Education Task Force. The House failed to concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 2, noes 56, excused 2. House requests the Senate appoint a conference committee number 1 to meet with a like committee from the House to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. From the House of Representatives, message number 396, concurrence failed. Mr. President, House Bill number 214, Practice of Law Amendments. The House failed to concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 3, noes 55, excused 2. The House requests the Senate appoint a conference committee number 1 to meet with a like committee from the House to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. From the House of Representatives, message, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 27, Vietnam Veterans Welcome Home Highway. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2. Senate file number 30, Camp Guernsey Range Management Fund. Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 42, noes 16, excused 2. Concurrence requested, Senate file number 45, Digital Information Privacy Task Force Reappropriation. Senate file listed above passed on third reading in amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2. House respectfully asks Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message number 406, concurrence requested. Senate file number 119, Hospice Respite Care. Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 58, excused 2. House respectfully asks Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. February the 26th, 2015, from the House of Representatives. Third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading by a vote indicated. Senate file 73, forcible entry and detainer amendments. Ayes 58, excused 2. Senate file 75, child support enforcement amendments. Ayes 56, noes 2, excused 2. Senate File 93, County Road Fund Pavement Management. Ayes 55, noes 3, excused 2. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. From the House of Representatives, February the 26th, 2015, message number 391, Joint Conference, Conferees appointed Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the House appointed House conferees to meet with the Light Committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 12. The House conferees are Representative Miller, Chairman, Representative Baker, and Walters. Message number 390, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. The House appointed House conferees to meet with the Light Committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 33. The House conferees are Representative Dan Zwanitzer, Chairman, Representative Blackburn, and Stubson. Message number 389, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the House appointed House conferees to meet with the Light Committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 63. The House conferees are Representative Barlow, Chairman, Representative Baker, and Sommers. Message number 388, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the House appointed House conferees to meet with the Light Committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 18. The House conferees are Representative Gear, Chairman, Representatives Miller and Throne. Message number 387, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the House appointed conferees to meet with the Light Committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 15. The House conferees are Representative Crone, Chairman, Representative Helverson and Reeder. Message number 400, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the House appointed conferees to meet with the Light Committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 81. The House conferees are Representative Escobel, Chairman, Representative Lorson and Lindholm. Message number 408, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 2. Mr. President, House appointed House conferees to meet with the Light Committee number 2 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 13. The House conferees are Representative Croker, Chairman, Representative Nicholas and Pownall. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. Got another one.
I just keep coming.
From the House of Representatives, February the 26th, 2015, message number 409, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, Senate File 5, Quebec Number 1, Historic Site 3. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee Number 1 report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. I have no vote. I don't. There's no vote.
That's right. There is an action.
Huh?
We'll get it.
Okay.
I
have this one, yeah. Oh, Joint Conference Committee report, Senate File 5, Quebec Number 1, Historic Site 3, Reference House Message 291.
Signed. I wonder if that's part of the last report.
Yeah, that's the one that is signed.
Okay. Signed by all the conferees, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I got one more here. Well, this is the same thing. You want them read in?
Same deal?
No, okay.
One more.
February 26, 2015, from the House of Representatives, message number 399, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, House Bill number 73, Development of Education Standards. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on the bill listed above. By the vote indicated, ayes 52, noes 6, excused 2, Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. From the House of Representatives, message number 393, concurrence passed. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to the bills listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill 25, Railroad Rolling Stock Tax Exemption Sunset. Ayes 54, no 6, excused 2. House Bill number 56, Wyoming Food Freedom Act. Ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2. And House Bill 197, Emergency Vehicles, Tow Trucks, and Wreckers. Ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Okay, if that's all the messages, let's go back, finish up our third reading. I think we have two bills. House Bill 144, third reading of the bill.
House Bill number 144, Education, School Safety and Security, sponsored by the Education Committee, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
House Bill 144, any discussion?
Has an amendment.
I don't see any.
Yeah.
There must be an amendment. So yeah. If the reading clerk would please read an amendment. Thank you very much.
House Bill 144, third reading amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 1, line 5.
That's the Meyer amendment. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 144. Mr. President, this does three different things. The first thing on lines 10 and 11, it provides for a sunset to see so we can revisit this in 2019, make a determination whether or not this new program is effective. I think it's prudent to look at new programs, and this is one way that the whole body will be able to take a look at it. The next one, Mr. President, goes into page 8, line 22, and inserts the following. As follows, one half of the amount shall be. And what that does, Mr. President, is that of the funds that were appropriated, one half of those funds would come from the DCI. Mr. President, this would allow the DCI the opportunity to be more efficient with their full-time positions, and if they didn't want to provide for all of it, there's a possibility that they may decide they can do this with two positions rather than four, but it's entirely up to them. Mr. President, the next thing that happens here, we go to page 9, line 2, and it essentially goes splits the difference between the House position and what the position the Senate was. The House came in at three people, three new positions to DCI. We take it down to four rather than five. on page 9, line 2. So, Mr. President, I think there are three separate issues, but I would hope that we'd have the support for all three of them. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I'd ask that this amendment be divided. The divisions are as follows. Lines 1 through 12 shall be division 3, and that is the sunset provision. Lines 13 through 21 shall be division 2, and that is the distribution of funding division, where half of the funds are absorbed internally. Lines 22 through 25 shall be division 1, and that is shifting from 5 in our draft to 4 versus the 3 of the House for the number of positions.
It appears to be divisible, Senator Meyer. Do you have any objection to division?
No, I do not, Mr. President.
We're on to... So, the amendment's been divided into three parts. Division number 1 is lines 21 through 25. Division number 2 is lines 13 through 21. And division number 3 is lines 1 through 12. And we're on division number 1. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. On division number 1, Mr. President, we've been through this and we've addressed this. And this is certainly an issue where we have some disagreement with the House position. But in testimony, both in front of, during the interim, the Joint Education Committee, again to the Education Committee, and then again to the Appropriations Committee, we heard compelling testimony that indicates that if this is to be done correctly, and that's the hope, is to get a program that works as we intend, where nobody needs to be put on hold, there's always an operator available in DCI's op center to respond to one of these types of calls without having anyone wait, but being able to immediately respond and respond directly, this is the minimum number of positions that is needed. The calculation is reasonable. It's based on the shifts, based on their current staffing. And I don't see how we can have half a baby on this one or build half a plane. There's a number of shifts that need to be put into place to operate the program. I know that we're always enthusiastic about taking a number and dividing it by two where possible. But if you divide it by two and the program fails, then it's going to be difficult to have any expectations of good quality outcomes from that program. Mr. President, this is one of the cases where this is the number we need. We need 5 based on their staffing assessments to implement it as we intend to have it implemented. When you look at the overall cost of the program versus what we hope to get out of it, versus the fact that we're looking to prevent major tragedies, injuries, suicides, firearms brought to school by children, cuttings, bullying, all of the other things that we've seen demonstrated in this program by our neighbors to the south, it seems to me, Mr. President, that it's worth the one extra staff position, if that's what it takes, to accomplish those objectives if we save even one life. And I hope the body can support this legislation in particular, but this full staffing of this legislation. And therefore, Mr. President, I hope the body rejects division number 1 to third reading amendment number 1.
We're on division number 1. Any further discussion on division number 1? Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. President, on in support of division number 1, the testimony that I remember in the Senate Appropriations Committee was that ultimately it took three individuals to staff out the call center that is already located at the department. And that call center is actually the Law Enforcement Information Center. And so that's up and running 24 hours a day, but you've got information that's coming from FBI or from DEA or from wherever it is, and they comes in here and they push it there, and it goes back and forth both ways. And so that's already there. But what you need are for these three individuals, for just as the good senator from the Ivory Towers had spoken about, you need that to cover this this call center 24 hours a day for 5 days a week. They find out, tracking the stuff in Colorado, that these calls don't come in very much on the weekend, but you need them, but they're mostly come in during the week. And so in order to make sure, because if you had a call that came in that this person might have to talk for a while, you know, if it's a suicide prevention call or something like that, it might go for a while, and they can't afford to have the law enforcement information center shut down. So you need three positions for that. The other two positions, Mr. President, was one for an administrator to be the boss and make sure this thing, everything ran right, and the other one was to be an outreach or public affairs officer, if you will, that will go around and instruct the schools that this is going to be happening. In the school districts. As it comes up, though, also in testimony, was it's going to take a considerable time to stand this up. They're going to have to write rules. They're going to have to write procedures. They're going to have to do a bunch of other things before this actually is stood up. And so as you look at that, once you're going to need the administrator to help write the rules and help get the procedures and everything lined out and get the training done for these three plus the other operators that are already at the department at the law enforcement information center. They're going to have to train those folks. This is going to take a little while to stand up. And at the end of the day, you wonder at this point in time why you would really need that one extra person. Because I don't know what good is, you know, if you're going to go around and you're advertising to schools that this call center is there, but yet it's not stood up and they're not trained and it's really not functioning yet, you wonder what this other person may be doing. So ultimately, it is going to take a little while. For the first year to 18 months, or actually the 15 months that are left in this biennium, that they can probably get by with the four that this amendment would provide for.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. When we look back at the original bill and then the amendment, it goes from three to five. But when I look at the amendment as it stands with the amendment that passed, it doesn't specify where those two other positions are going. It just goes three to five. We've heard that it's going to be emergency operators or the people on the other end of the phone, but there's no specification of them. So this is just about increasing positions. We haven't heard that they're the operators that answer the phone. Those three positions are a supervisor, two supervisors, essentially a director, a supervisor, and one phone answering person. There's not clear justification for why we need this. As we said last week, a 365-day, seven days a week, 24 hours a day, that's 6.7 people. We're just adding positions with no clear justification. I'd support the amendment to reduce this.
The division.
Discussion on division number one, which reduces the positions available that end the standard budget. It does affect appropriation. I think we ought to have a roll call on it. Roll call.
Anderson, District 2?
No.
Anderson, District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
No.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll excused. Emmerich? No. Escobel?
No.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Kinski?
Aye.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
Aye.
Pappas?
No.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
No.
Scott?
No.
Von Platern?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
No.
President Nicholas?
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 14 aye, 15 no, 1 excused.
Division number one to third reading number one, House Bill 144 has failed. We're now on division number two, which is lines 13 through 20. Senator Meyer.
Yeah, Mr. President, what this particular amendment does is realize that a very, very small amount of the actual labor in the five new positions is going to go toward actually answering calls. You'll have a couple people out there in administrative positions and positions that are going to be kind of drumming up support for this program. But it's essentially to fully staff the DCI. The secondary utilization of these positions is going to be for a couple of calls a day that might come into the call center. And the rest of it's really going to be for DCI, so they have a 24-hour footprint on their phone center. So what this does is just say that of the funds appropriated to DCI, that half of those funds are going to be used for as DCI appropriations, and the other half are going to be new appropriations.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, my concern with this is that they don't have the opportunity as an agency to present that budget consideration to the Appropriations Committee or anyone else at this point in time. And I don't know what it would do if they had to use a portion of their budget. In concept, the idea that a portion of it would be paid for out of the general fund, which is basically what we're saying here, general fund dollars that have been appropriated to DCI be used for this because they're doing some of the time for DCI. I'm perfectly happy with that concept. And then a portion of it come from school foundation program because, again, a portion of it is for the school foundation program. So I get that, and it makes sense. The deputy position, obviously, is very specific to this, so I would expect that to be fully paid for by the school foundation and the communications entity. But these other operators will have flexibility as to who they're representing at any given time. Sometimes they're schools, sometimes they're the rest of the state. General fund would be appropriate for that, Mr. President. The trouble is we don't have the luxury then of figuring out how much money they need and what the general fund obligation should be and whether they have sufficient funds to flex over or how that would work out. So, Mr. President, as you read this, you see that they have to bring this back to appropriations and don't get to report it in their standard budget. They have to come back and make a separate request next time in the budget to work this out and present it again. It shall not be presented as part of the standard budget. That's explicit in the legislation. Mr. President, I think that there's no way to cut it in half at this point in time appropriately and have confidence that it's affordable and works into a reasonable budget, but I would expect that conversation to go forward through the Joint Appropriations Committee if this bill passes and the next time they're before them, because it's required by the legislation that they do so. So, Mr. President, I would urge the body to reject the second division of this amendment at this time, recognizing that it's going to have to be worked out with the Appropriations Committee, and I hope the Appropriations Committee does take that into consideration the next time and properly works out the distribution between the general fund and the school foundation program, because there's a lot of merit to the concept. I just don't think it's implementable on third reading at this point in time and urge the body to reject this division.
On the amendment, division number two, Senator Coe.
Mr. President, I too would urge you reject division number two. I just don't think, members of the Senate, that we can look into that budget right now and say that this will work. The other thing is that, you know, in testimony from the Attorney General, he was sincere about his testimony. The third point I'll make is that we get an opportunity to come back in the budget session here in about sooner than we like, probably a year, 10 to 11 months, whatever that is, and have a look at this program after it's got a track record. So I'd urge that you reject division number two.
Any further discussion? To the movement, take his second time on this side. To the movement, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I agree with the two folks, one from the Ivory Tower and one from the footsteps of Yellowstone, that we ourselves can't look at it or a body can't look at it during the interim. And Mr. President, that's what the governor has the B-11 process for in his flex account in the state budget. And I'm sure the governor will feel this is an important enough process to move forward. And then he can come back in his budget, give us his recommendation about the split between DCI and the split between the school foundation, and appropriations can take a close look at it at that time. But we certainly have enough flexibility within the governor's ability to flex.
We're on division number two to third reading amendment number one. It appears to be a fund shift that a roll call is not required unless somebody asks for. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
That amendment has failed. We're now on division number three, which is lines 1 through 12 of third reading amendment number one. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, this is just a decision by the body. This is kind of a voted up or voted down, in my opinion. I'll vote against it, but I'm certainly not offended in any way by having a four-year sunset on this program where we have to come back to the body after those 4 years, report to this body what the results of the program are, the utility of the program, and then have the opportunity to decide and evaluate at that point in time whether it's been effective in Wyoming. I see no real danger of that. I'll probably vote against, but I won't be at all offended if the body feels that that's an appropriate decision. So, Mr. President, vote it up or vote it down.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, I urge that you support this part of the amendment. I actually think that between now and the sunset date, that we'll be able to see the effectiveness of this wonderful program, and we can always come back in and change it. And if by chance, which I don't think will happen, for some reason the program is not effective, then we have the opportunity to deal with it. So this part of the amendment I would urge that you support.
Further discussion on the amendment? We're on division number three, which is lines 1 through 12 of third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 144. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has passed. No further amendments. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill? Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the bill. I was a no vote in appropriations, and these are the reasons why. Ultimately, when you do the math on this thing, in 3 to 5 years out, if this is a successful program, according to the proponents of the bill, it will average about 720 calls a year. That's after it's out and successful. This same program in Colorado is now to about 3,100, almost 3,200 calls a year. In the first couple of years, only had about 100 or so calls a year, 109, 110 calls a year for the first couple of years. Then it's gone up significantly since then. But at its best, the hope for this program is to have 720 calls a day. What that averages out to is about 2.77 calls per day. That probably means the way that you look at the graphs and the way that the information is presented, you're going to have two on Monday. You're probably going to have roughly three on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and then probably one on Friday, or probably two on Friday. And so what we're doing in doing that is we're putting up, and we're going to stand up five people to take 2.7 calls a day on the days of the week, and that's not going to happen for several years. Now, while it would be important, and so you can say, well, you know, if we save one life, that's worth it. Mr. President, that logic applies all across the board, whether it's cars or anything else. At some point that we look and all we're doing is throwing money at a problem. Let me tell you what I believe, though, is that this is a new program that significantly overlaps existing programs that are already out there. First of all, you've got a number on suicide hotline calls. We already have, and there are both national and local suicide hotlines available in your communities. Many communities have local suicide hotlines, and if you're watching the advertising and other things out there, there are any number of national suicide hotlines that can be called where you have expert people who can talk about these things. You have local 911. At the end of the day, if there is an emergency situation, the folks at this center are going to call up and call local 911. There's nobody going to respond from DCI on these things. It's going to be referred back to the local 911 operator who's going to dispatch the appropriate first responder services. I would submit to you, Mr. President, that we could simply come back and educate the appropriate use and have folks call 911 at first. If there's an immediate threat, we have made significant progress in the last number of years about that it's okay to tell under circumstances where serious bodily harm or other things are at issue. We're making progress there, and we can continue to make that progress. Also, with respect to local bullying and abuse and other types of those types of victims, We have bullying programs that are available in the school districts now. Those can be enhanced or expanded on a local level. We can also continue the education and make sure that districts provide those same services. At the end of the day, I look at this and what we're doing is a program that we're going to basically increase by one-third the Law Enforcement Information Center to field, and we're going to have a director, we're going to have a public service education officer, and three full-time operators to answer 2.7 calls a day on weekdays, none on the weekends, and that those services are available locally or could be enhanced locally to meet that need. On and against the bill.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the bill. Folks, 4 years, $2+ million for five positions. One executive manager, one executive officer, and three, if I understand it right, three terminal specialists. This is how we grow government. What we're talking about in this bill, statutorily, there are already people charged with these responsibilities. It's your sheriffs, your police police departments, your towns, counties. They have the authority, they have the responsibility. There have been other programs mentioned that specify in the suicide area. The dispatchers in your towns and counties that answer these telephone calls, they're trained on this. There's not a big gap. Could we do better? Could we have more specialists? Certainly. This is a lot of money in 4 years. That $2+ million, if you just look at the budget, it's I think it's $410,000 a year, but that doesn't include your vehicles, your office space, your equipment, your training, your phones, all the other program or all the other costs that go along with this. Again, we're growing government, taking local responsibilities, moving it down to the state level when we have people in those communities that are already tasked with this, have the authority, the responsibility, and the budgets. I'd ask you to be pretty careful about this expansion.
A website, mobile telephone applications. So we're going to have somebody do an application, some kind of a programming engineer to do a mobile telephone app, and we're going to have cellular text messaging. So, you know, just the labor costs in this thing is really just a camel's nose under the tent if you look at the costs that's going to be associated with this in the future. But costs are only one thing, Mr. President. What really gets to me is the anonymity. And I can remember back when we had child abuse reporting, and there was a balance. There was a balance between false reporting and actually a child reporting abuse that was happening. And there was that concern, and we haven't addressed that concern here. The concern that I have, and I think it's a real concern, is bullying. I can see I'm a kid that's in junior high or high school, and I'm looking at this, and I understand that I can turn in somebody that I don't like, whether he's the captain of the football team or the nerd in the corner or whoever in between or one of the cheerleaders. It doesn't make any difference. Somebody is targeting that did something to them that they didn't like, and they're going to call in and say that they were doing a criminal activity. Maybe it's a bomb scare. Maybe they say that it's a false gun report. And there's absolutely no way that you're going to be able to come back in and identify that individual because he's guaranteed anonymity. So, Mr. President, I think that there's a lot of flaws in this. And I think that we really have to think this through before we implement it. I'm glad we have a sunset in it because then we'll see what the problems are a few years down the road. But, Mr. President, as the former speaker said, most of this, if not all of it, is already being taken care of.
Senator Cole? Mr. President, thank you. On and in support of the bill. Mr. President, your Joint Education Committee met in the interim. And as I said earlier, I think on first reading, this is one of the most powerful programs I've ever witnessed. The Joint Education Committee listened, and I can't remember the votes on it, but it was a huge majority of the Joint Education Committee thought the same thing. So they say that there's only 700 calls a year. That's a projection. That's based on comparing us with Colorado. There's an economy of scale there somehow. I know we're much smaller. And the Attorney General presented that comparison of 700 calls. But if we get one call that might stop something like we had in Cokeville, something like they had in Newtown, Connecticut, something like they had in Denver, in Aurora, it's worth it. The key to this program, I think, safe to tell, is the anonymous side of it. Now, I was in county government for 8 years and was active in how we manned our dispatch centers. And we consolidated our dispatch centers up in Park County. We have one central dispatch that dispatches ambulance, fire, police, sheriff, all of that. I've been in our dispatch center when that place is so busy that dispatcher or even two dispatchers at a time, I've seen two in there, they get four or five things going on and they don't have time to react. I've seen it. This requires somebody to be there, not to be put on hold. And if I call 911 and I want to say this is an anonymous call that little Johnny's going to go over and shoot the school up, what's going to happen with that tip at the local dispatch center? So I urge that you support this bill. I don't walk on this floor very often and support a new program. We've got a WeTips program out there that doesn't work. Doesn't work. They've had 200 calls in 7 years. And it goes through a call receiving center in California. So I urge that you support this bill. I think it's a good bill. It was well vetted, well thought out in the interim by the Joint Education Committee. Ask that you support Senate House Bill 144.
Thank you. Just quickly. You know, when I look at this bill, I think about the due line. Most of you know that the due line is distance early warning, national defense. Well, this works like due line. It's a set of eyes and ears that are out there in order to detect things in advance. And I won't bore you with war stories, but I have three things that stick in my mind during teaching. One was a gun, the other was a knife, and the other was a 2x2 with nails driven through it. make it look like a medieval mace. I was on playground duty early in the morning before a lot of folks were there and got a tip that Bodie's got a gun. Well, Bodie did have a gun. Was able to talk to Bodie and whatnot. We went in and found it. Colt 45 Peacemaker loaded and cocked in a locker. It was intended to be used on the principal. Point being, early warning. The other was, is Louis's got a knife. I was a student teacher at the time. Well, Louis was after me. Well, just out of college and had been an athlete, I handled that one myself. The other one was when my wife was teaching in a special education class and another student brought this 2x2 with nails through it. Well, the whole point of it is this is a distant early warning system by which you can pick up on these things early on to prevent the incident, to prevent the accident. I think it has value. I think it has value equal to whatever the money we're talking about here. I would hope that you would give it your favorable support.
Further discussion, Senator Burns.
Mr. President, on against this bill. The incidents that were just described just now are fodder for 9/11 calls, not for a phone call from Upton to Cheyenne. You call 911, that's where your local response comes from. And that's one of the problems I have with this bill, both in committee and on the floor. The emergencies and so forth that I've heard described, that this bill that we're setting up this new bureaucracy for, seem for the most part to be handled better by other agencies. If you're talking about suicide prevention, somebody calls up and they're suicidal. There are, as the good vice president said, there are suicide lines, people who are better trained to do that sort of thing. If there's a gunman or somebody with a weapon in a school, that's a 911 call. Calling Cheyenne doesn't do you any good. Calling 911 locally does. If somebody's bullying somebody else, you could make a call to, and this is where I have one of my real problems with this bill, you're calling DCI, Department of Criminal Investigation, over somebody bullying, again, let's say up in Upton. How interested is DCI actually going to be in something like that? DCI handles some of the worst criminal cases in this state. And so I think it's going to be a matter of priorities to them. And that brings me to the other thing that hasn't been mentioned that bothers me a lot about this bill. According to the bill, all records will be kept. Now, there's language here about confidential information and so forth, but the fact is, I assume all these calls will be recorded and kept at DCI. How much power is that going to give DCI? They're going to have years and years of these recordings. Whoever's calling, and this goes back to what the good senator from Goshen County was talking about, the caller is anonymous, but the person they're complaining about, there will now be a recorded record in state records that this person behave badly, whether it's bullying or whatever it is, whether it's true or not. I've got some real problems. We're setting up basically a program in an agency that I don't think is properly equipped. It's not the right agency for this type of program.
Discussion on the bill? Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I hesitate to go against all the good work. You see how thick and how much material and work went into it. Had an opportunity to sit through it and listen to it at the end of the end term in Jackson. I apologize, missing through a lot of the discussion. When we were working on a committee, I was in another room herding some big horn sheep around. But back on this, I was there in 86 in one of our schools, one of our state's worst case histories of school hostage and student injury. Had an opportunity to be there within, the same day of the event, and then listen to the discussion and followed up in numerous school board meetings because it involved my school district. And unfortunately, a tip line wouldn't have caused anything different to happen there. I don't even know that a security guard could have caused anything different to happen over in Cokeville, Wyoming. Well, this is a good gesture. In the long run, folks, we're setting up in something entirely new, and we've got to feed it down the line. A big word of caution, respect for all the work that's gone into it, but a big word of caution towards it.
Senator Landon?
Thank you, Mr. President. Appreciate the conversation, and just wanted to speak a little bit about the culture that we find ourselves in. And in my day job, I often talk to a lot of students about a lot of different things. And one of the things that you learn as an administrator is that they're not going to tell you much. I mean, students don't rat each other out. And that's really one of the baselines of this program and one of the things that kind of intrigued me about it throughout the interim. And when we launch into this whole conversation about security, you're really trying to reach out and find things that you think might make a difference. The reason I think this might make a difference, Senators, is that you're going to find out things that you wouldn't otherwise find out. They're not going to call 911. That's not what our young people are going to do. We'll never know if it might have worked at a place like Cokeville. Chances are that individual gave that indication to somebody in some manner, some way, maybe not verbally, but somebody might have picked up on something. And if we'd have gotten a tip, who knows? Maybe we could have avoided the disaster of that day. I agree that it takes a tremendous leap of faith to launch a program like this. The state down south did it. They have found it to be very, very useful in heading off some pretty tough situations. We thought as a joint education committee that it was one of the best things we had seen. And I support the bill. I think it's worth a chance. We're going to sunset this thing and come back and visit about it. Mr. President, we talk about security, and I've had the opportunity to come at it from two different angles in this past interim. I got to sit as chairman of your school facilities committee, and we talked about, well, should we do any security projects or not? And then I got to sit on the joint education committee. Should we launch into a program that might make a difference or not? If you really want to tackle security, you have to have a little bit of a leap of faith, Mr. Chairman or Mr. President. And admittedly, this bill does that, but I think it's worth supporting. I would encourage your aye vote on the bill.
Further discussion? Senator Coe, for your second time.
Well, Mr. President, just very briefly, the good senator from Sheridan County alludes to the fact that DCI would, in fact, record all this stuff. I can tell you that everything that happens at your 911 office at your local home is recorded just as well. And one other point, the research that's out there shows that 81% of the violent incidents in U.S. schools, someone other than the attacker knew it was going to happen, but failed to report it. So, Mr. President, with that, I urge that you support the bill and call for the question.
Question having been called, we're on House Bill 141, Education, School Safety, and Security. If the... What did I say? I said... Apparently. Let me say that again. We're on House Bill 144, third reading. If the chief clerk would please call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
No.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
No.
Burns.
No.
Case. Christensen?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
No.
Driscoll excused. Emmerich?
Aye.
Escobel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
No.
Johnson?
Aye.
Kinski?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Pappas?
Aye.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Fladern?
No.
Wasterberger?
Aye.
President Nicholas?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 16 aye, 13 no, 1 excused.
Set of file 144. Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate file 144 has passed the Senate. Senate file 186, third reading of the bill.
Senate file number 186, human trafficking forfeiture of property, sponsored by Representative Conley. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Chief Clerk tells me I'm getting rummy. It's House Bill 186. It was read incorrectly. We're on House Bill 186. Discussion. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I've been looking at this bill and looking at this bill and trying to puzzle it out. And I'm concerned that the bill is overbroad and reaches things that we really don't want to, you know. Everybody is against human trafficking. Everybody's against particularly where this has a sexual aspect to it. There's some real harm done. And I think the purpose of this bill is just to bring a big hammer down on it. But I'm concerned that this particular bill may be reaching down and getting into ordinary commercial disputes. And let me see if I can explain my concern. On page 2, lines 5 through 6, it looks to me like you can take by forfeiture all the property of somebody who's involved in one of these things. And then when you look at what the article is that we're talking about, it includes some things. For instance, 62704, forced labor. A person is guilty of forced labor or servitude when a person intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly uses coercion, deception, or fraud to compel an individual to provide forced services. Well, look at the definition of forced services. Your causes or threatens to cause financial harm to any person, and then the definition of deception means a person created individual's impression of material fact evident which is false, which the person knows or reason to be false, including nature of the labor or services to be provided, fundamental conditions of labor. Okay. Suppose, Mr. Chairman, let me just give a hypothetical. Suppose you're in the sheep business. Never been in the sheep business, but I know a little about it. Suppose you're in the sheep business and you go out and hire a law student for the summertime to herd your sheep. And you tell him, look, I really need you for the summer. You don't complete this, by gum, I'll see you have trouble when you come to get employment in the future. You're not going to be dependable. You're threatening them financially. And you're saying, I won't pay you if you don't complete the thing. And the student comes and says, okay, I've been threatened if I don't complete it. But they misrepresented. He told me I was going to get room and board. But the room was a sheep wagon. And the board was beans and they were wormy. And there wasn't enough firewood in the camp to cook them with. And it just didn't work. Okay, you're getting he's alleging you violated 62704. Now,
it strikes me that suddenly he's threatening you with a great big hammer. He's not saying just you might get convicted of this felony. That's bad enough. He's saying you're going to lose the whole ranch. Because you hired this kid who knew the law, and you didn't give him decent quarters, and you didn't feed him right. And, Mr. Chairman, I'm exaggerating, but that's the kind of thing that I fear here. You can see another dispute we would have in agriculture over compelling somebody to build a fence. And you could reach these same kind of conditions. I think that for this bill to be successful, we would need to narrow what is to be forfeited, and we would need to narrow the offenses somewhat, because I think they're very broadly written so that the prosecutors can get convictions.
Time.
But I really wonder about it, Mr. Chairman, Mr. President.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. On against the bill. Members of the Senate, to continue a little bit about what my tall colleague from Natrona County talked about. And it's just so broad, but specifically, I'll give you one excellent example of that. If you look on page 9 under F, it says, an interest in property belonging to a third party shall not be forfeited to the extent that the third party establishes it has a perfected lien in the property or proves by a preponderance of evidence that he has a perfected security interest in the property or proves he is an innocent owner. So I'm an owner out there of a property, and for whatever reason it gets confiscated in this type of trafficking, and all of a sudden I am on the line as a third party owner to A, prove that I'm an innocent owner, or I have to talk about a perfected lien in the property. Mr. President, that's just not what we should be doing, that kind of law in Wyoming. I mean, what happened to personal private property rights? And it just goes so far. We had the discussion the other day on page 3, little 3I, about the conveyances of aircraft, vehicles, so on and so forth. And we thought about we could put a word in there about the owner to protect the owner's rights and your private property rights, but Mr. President, after I looked at the bill and the way it's drafted, there's just no way that I could amend it to, I think, privately or protect your private rights as an owner without just, it just wasn't doable, Mr. President. So I really have problems with this bill. It's not about trying to catch the people that are trafficking, and clearly if they're utilizing certain aircraft or whatever to go ahead and forfeit on those, but what about the private property rights and the owners that are legitimate, innocent owners? Yet you're going to ask them to try to prove that they are? Bad bill, Mr. President.
How do you really feel about it?
Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman, I don't usually get up, Mr. President, I don't usually get up and speak, but first thing off on this bill when I read it, it really struck me. On page 2, line 5, it says, all assets, everything. So this, and I have confidence in the court system that they wouldn't take maybe all. But it says right here, everything. So suppose a man has worked all of his life. He has money in the bank. He has securities. He has a retirement account. That's all of his assets. Are you going to take all of these assets? So that's the thing. And the other thing, Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, is once this person does go to prison, and you've taken all of his assets, when he comes back, he's got nothing. He's totally broke. What's that person supposed to do? Start all over? I do have real questions about this bill.
Senator Bonflater.
Thank you, Mr. President. I will point out on that same page, page 2, it starts out saying the following is subject to forfeiture is permitted pursuant to subsection C through H of this section. And then the big line in question has got everybody's dander up. All assets subject to the jurisdiction of the court of a person engaged in planning or perpetrating an act of this state which violates this article. So it is not all assets by anybody on the street that happens to have a hotel or a rental house or an airplane or whatever they may be get caught obtained or caught in the act.
Senator Rothfuss?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I just wanted to clarify a little bit about this language. The reason the language is written the way it is because this is the product of the Joint Interim Judiciary Committee, and it's exactly the same wording in all capacities as was passed by Senate File 14 that we passed out of this chamber already, including the quote that we heard from the Majority Floor Leader about the liens. That is a direct, word-for-word, line-by-line quote from the other statute, which is why it's in this legislation. And in fact, the reason it came so late and it's a green sheet is all of the amendments from the Senate side were taken, rolled into the bill before it came to the Senate, and presented in the capacity of human trafficking instead of just drugs. So the only difference between this and what we already resoundingly passed in Senate File 14 is that this deals with the article on human trafficking, where the other dealt with drugs. There's no difference, and that's intentional, because what we were doing was respecting that Joint Interim Judiciary Committee work. So if there are problems, Mr. President, and I'm not sure whether there are or are not, then there are other problems that we'll have to address. It seems to me, Mr. President, that what we want is consistency within our statutes for how these would be interpreted and implemented. In other words, if we have civil asset forfeiture in an instance of human trafficking, it should mirror how we implement it when we're dealing with drug laws. That's why the wording is identical to what we just passed. Now, if we need to change that, then we've got some work to do, because we just passed some legislation that already implemented all of these words that we're now concerned about. And I'm uncertain what the differences are where it's bad with human trafficking, which, again, in Article 7 is a very bad thing that we want some ability to have civil assets forfeiture on, but the language is somehow imperfect here. But when we use it over on the drug side, somehow that's adequate. So I'm a little curious about that, and I'd ask for a bit of an explanation there. But it seems to me that it's pretty good language. There might be some flaws. I'd be happy to work on those flaws and would have been interested in hearing those in second reading. With regard to the circumstances that my good friend from Natrona County talks about, the only time this would be implemented, and one of the conveniences of it being in Article 7 here, is that it only occurs under circumstances of a felony conviction. So there has to be a felony conviction that this is associated with. There's nothing in Article 7 that isn't a felony conviction, which is why those difficulties that the governor had with Senate File 14, again using the exact same language, isn't a concern here, because in the drug laws, there are misdemeanor convictions that could be associated with a desired asset forfeiture. However, in this instance, since there are no misdemeanors in human trafficking laws, it's not a concern here, Mr. President. So, Mr. President, I'm a little concerned why, with the identical language, we don't like the civil asset forfeiture law right now, but we really liked it a few days ago when we passed it out of the chamber.
Senator Christensen?
Thank you, Mr. President. Just to take the previous speaker's comment just a little bit further, you know, he talked about the safeguards. The safeguards that were in Senate File 14, they're important. It's safeguards for the banks holding notes on cars, banks, snowmobiles, and to protect innocent owners such as a spouse. These same safeguards are here. And I would point out that the Attorney General really liked this one.
Senator Perkins?
Thank you. Just a couple of response points just to make sure we're all on the same page. As I, Mr. President, when you look at page 2, line 5 and 6, where we have all assets subject to the jurisdiction of the court, generally that what that would mean is you would assume that these would be in the district court, and I could be wrong on this, but I believe that when you have the district court, that that would include any property, any real property held within the state of Wyoming. And as far as personal property, well, there might be some overseas things that wouldn't reach, but at least in my work in probate, in the court, district court sitting in probate, generally has jurisdiction over all assets, regardless of where they're located, for personal property. so that if you have a bank account or somewhere in New York or you're in a different state, that gets pulled in, and the district court has jurisdiction over that personal property, even though the account may be opened and at a bank in another state. Generally, I think that the court order that the court does have jurisdiction over that and can compel that asset. So while I could be wrong on that, I think that jurisdiction of the court is fairly expansive. The other difference I would point out, Mr. President, between this bill and the one that passed through this House earlier was with respect on the same page, lines 2 and 8 through 10, where we're talking, and 5 through 6, which is all the assets subject to the jurisdiction of the court of a person engaged in planning or perpetrating this act in this state which violates this article. And as I look at that and compare that with the previous bill that went through here, the property subject to forfeiture in that bill were basically all the assets, conveyances including aircraft or vehicles, and could be houses, it could be other things, but usually there was a nexus back to the criminal act. In this case, it was knowingly used or intended for use to transport in any manner, to knowingly facilitate the transportation for the sale or receipt of property described herein, which was the controlled substances. So there, I think that there is a significant difference between this bill and the other bill, in that this appears to go after all assets where there was some nexus in the other bill. I would just point that out for the body's edification.
Senator Scott?
Mr. President, I want to make clear, I don't have a problem with the forfeiture procedures in this bill. They seem to be properly done. The problem I have is that the description of the crimes is overbroad and reaches into some things that could be perfectly legitimate civil disputes. And with the threat, the added threat that can be used as coercion, with the magnitude of the forfeiture here that would be possible, I think some real mischief could be done. And that's where I think this bill is perhaps overbroad.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President, for my second time. All of the rest of those provisions in the article, though, obviously were passed 2 years ago and are out of the purview of this particular civil asset forfeiture. So, in other words, if there's a crime committed under the article, and that article was written overly broad as far as the interpretation of that crime, then that may be the case, and I'm not sure exactly which wording in the article is of concern, but again, that's a ship that sailed. We can go back and address it again, but we can't address it from within the civil asset forfeiture legislation because it's certainly outside the scope of the title. As far as whether or not you would be allowed to, again, there has to be a felony conviction. If there were overly broad concerns where you can simply misuse the potential for a felony conviction against somebody, it seems like the felony conviction itself would be a pretty heavy hammer. It's not a misdemeanor then associated with civil asset forfeiture. You would have to be able to convince somebody that you can get a felony conviction on them, which honestly, if you've already convinced somebody that you can get them convicted of a felony, I don't know that you need to go to civil asset forfeiture also as a heavier hammer. I think you've got a heavy enough hammer at that point and things will go well. As far as the jurisdiction of the courts, again, the language was taken and directly derived from the previous statute. It is based on the nexus of association with the crime. You can see that throughout here. It says on little a on that page 2, of a person engaged in planning or perpetrating an act in the state which violates this article. So, again, it has to go back to a violation of the article, which means a crime associated with human trafficking. Influence over a trafficked individual, again, going back to that nexus. Acquired or maintained by a person with the intent to and for the purpose of supporting, planning, conducting, or concealing an act in this state which violates this article, human trafficking. Going back to the nexus again, derived from, involved in, or used, or intended to be used to commit an act in the state which violates this article, again, human trafficking. All of the instances in which human asset forfeiture could take place in this legislation are derived in the same manner that they were derived by the Joint Judiciary Committee for Senate File 14, in that they have to be directly associated with the crime and that the individual has to be convicted of a felony, and that if there's an innocent ownership or a lien or any other circumstance that's unassociated, there are provisions in this legislation, as there were in the previous legislation, that would help to support that. And again, if there aren't in this legislation, then it's because there weren't in the Joint Interim Committee product. There isn't a difference or delineation. This is an attempt to correct a 2013 shortcoming, which was an intentional shortcoming by this body. What it was we put forward human trafficking legislation, but we as a body intentionally left out, Mr. Chairman, the civil asset forfeiture portions of that statute, of that article, knowing that the Judiciary Committee was going to come forward in this interim and put together legislation that could be inserted in that based on their work that they were going to do with the drug-related civil asset forfeiture. And that's what's been done here. This is fulfilling that objective that was set forward a few years ago. It's doing it with exactly that legislation. And, Mr. President, for my last time, I would encourage the body to vote for and support this Senate file. Question?
Senator Bebout.
First of all, just the ruling of the chair, and I know that my colleague from Albany County has spoken twice. He's one of the sponsors on the bill. If I'm out of line speaking for my second time, I sure won't speak.
Folks, I mean, we started off with Senator Scott. People have been rotating around. I just haven't paid attention to insisting that there be one last, but you only get two times to speak. Yours is the second time.
Okay, thank you, Mr. President. Very briefly, members of the Senate, for my second time, and I heard the argument from my colleague from Albany County about how it's similar to another bill that passed here for dealing with asset forfeiture. That's not exactly the way it is. There is a difference, and I think that points to why this bill is flawed. And if you read that other bill, it talks about an interest in property belonging to a third party shall not be forwarded if a third party establishes by a preponderance of evidence that he's an innocent owner, period. That's all it talks about. This one goes one step further and brings other people into the equation, and that talks about people that have a perfected lien in the property, or they have to prove that they have a preponderance of evidence that they have a perfected security interest. I'm not sure why they want to do that. What that tells me, if it's a vehicle and I'm the bank and I've got an interest in that, then they seize it now under this law, and compared to the previous one he was talking about, I'm going to have to prove under a preponderance of evidence that I've got a perfected security interest. We shouldn't have to do that. That has nothing to do with what this bill is trying to accomplish. Once again, on and against the bill.
Question having been called, roll call on the bill.
Anderson District 2. Anderson District 28. Barnard. Bebout.
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
No.
Driscoll excused Emmerich?
No.
Escobel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Kinski?
No.
Landon? Meyer?
No.
Pappas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
No.
Von Fladern?
No. Aye.
Wasserberger?
No.
President Nicholas?
No.
Closing vote? Christensen, aye to no. Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 6 aye, 23 no, 1 excused.
House Bill 186, having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 186 has failed to pass the Senate. For that order of business of signing enrolled acts.
Are these ready to go up?
Okay. Folks, the
We've got quite a few enrolled acts to be signed here. We're just going to go through them. It's going to take a little time. So what I'd ask is this, is while you're, if you've had, we're going to, after we do this, we'll go into concurrences. So if you've sent up a concurrence report in the last couple hours while I've been through there, would you please check to see whether or not the report was distributed? And if you need, come up and talk to the chief clerk just to make sure that we're trying to get as many as possible ready to go. But you'll have a little time here because we've got a bunch of acts to sign. Senate Enrolled Act 26.
Senate Enrolled Act number 26 being original Senate File 43, an act relating to telecommunications.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 26 being original Senate File 43. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 27.
Senate Enrolled Act number 27 being original Senate File 59, an act relating to Wyoming Public Television.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 27 being original Senate File number 59. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 28.
Senate Enrolled Act number 28 being original Senate File 65, an act relating to banking.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 28 being original Senate File number 65. I so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 29.
Senate Enrolled Act number 29 being original Senate File 82, an act relating to Funeral Service Practitioners Act.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 29 being original Senate File 82. I've so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 30.
Senate Enrolled Act number 30 being original Senate File 97, an act relating to telecommunications.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 30 being original Senate File 97. I've so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 31.
Senate Enrolled Act number 31 being original Senate File 29, an act relating to motor vehicles.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 31 being original Senate File 29. I've so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 32.
Senate Enrolled Act number 32 being original Senate File 17, an act relating to public works and contracts.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 32 being original Senate File number 9, Senate File 17. I've so signed Senate Enrolled Act number 33.
Senate Enrolled Act number 33 being original Senate File 42, an act relating to the administration of government.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 33 being original Senate File 42. I so sign Senate Enrolled Act 34.
Senate Enrolled Act number 34 being original Senate File 111, an act relating to the Wyoming Probate Code.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 34 being original Senate File number 111. I have so signed. Senate File 120, or Enrolled Act 20.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 35 being original Senate File 120, an act relating to the Uniform Interstate Family Support Act.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 35 being original Senate File Number 120. So signed, Senate Enrolled Act Number 36.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 36 being original Senate File 84, an act relating to geological sequestration.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 36 being original Senate File Number 84. So signed, Senate Enrolled Act Number 37.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 37 being original Senate File 54, an act relating to elections.
I'm about ready to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 37 being original Senate File 54. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 44.
House Enrolled Act Number 44 being original House Bill 128, an act relating to special district elections.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act Number 44 being original House Bill Number 128. And so signed. House Enrolled Act 45.
House Enrolled Act Number 45 being original House Bill 231, an act relating to the Hathaway Scholarship Program.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act Number 45 being original House Bill Number 231. So signed, House Enrolled Act Number 46.
House Enrolled Act Number 46 being original House Bill 233, an act relating to banks and banking.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act Number 46 being original House Bill 233. So signed. House Enrolled Act Number 47.
House Enrolled Act Number 47 being original House Bill 145, an act relating to fiduciaries.
You know, I gave you two bills. Which one did you read in? 39? Let's try this again.
Judiciary one. Look on the back.
I'm going to do it again. Let's do this. House and roll number 47. I give you two.
This is the one we read in.
Okay, then I'm about ready to sign House and roll Act number 47 being original House Bill number 145. So signed, House Enrolled Act Number 48.
House Enrolled Act Number 48 being original House Bill Number 39, an act relating to elections.
I've already signed House Enrolled Act Number 48 being original House Bill Number 39. So signed, House Enrolled Act Number 49.
House Enrolled Act Number 49 being original House Bill 237, an act relating to water and sewer districts.
I'm going to grab that.
Thank you. This is the last one that we made yet.
House Enrolled Act number 49 being original House Bill 237. I'm about ready to sign. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act number 50.
House Enrolled Act number 50 being original House Bill 159, an act relating to the separate statewide writing assessment.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 51 being original House Bill number 96. I've so signed. House Enrolled Act number 52.
House Enrolled Act number 52 being original House Bill 16, an act relating to crimes and offenses.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 52 being original House Bill 16. I've so signed. House Enrolled Act number 50.
House Enrolled Act number 50 being House Bill 159, an act relating to the separate statewide writing assessment.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 50 being original House Bill 159. I'm so signed. House Enrolled Act number 53.
House Enrolled Act being number 53, being House Bill number 172, an act relating to motor vehicles and placards for vehicles driven by persons with disabilities.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 53, being original House Bill number 172. I've so signed. House Enrolled, House Joint Resolution number 1. Let me restate that. Enrolled Joint Resolution number 1.
Okay. House Enrolled Joint Resolution number 1 being original House Joint Resolution number 7. And I'm not going to read what the rest of that is.
Yeah. I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Joint Resolution number 1 being original House Joint Resolution number 7. I have so signed. House Enrolled Joint Resolution number 2.
House Enrolled Joint Resolution number 2 being original House Joint Resolution number 8. And here again, I'm suspending with a reading or whatever.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Joint Resolution number 2 being original House Joint Resolution number 8. I have so signed. House Enrolled Joint Resolution number 3.
House Enrolled Joint Resolution number 3 being original House Joint Resolution number 3.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Joint Resolution number 3 being original House Resolution number 3. I've so signed. House Enrolled Joint Resolution number 4.
House Enrolled Joint Resolution number 4 being original House Joint Resolution number 6.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Joint Resolution number 4 being original House Joint Resolution number 6. So signed. House Enrolled Act number 54.
House Enrolled Act number 54 being original House Bill 150. And act relating to peace officers.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 54 being original House Bill number 150. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act number 55.
House rolled in Act number 55, being original House Bill 61, an act relating to banks.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 55, being original House Bill number 61. I so signed. House Enrolled Act number 56.
House Enrolled Act number 56, being original House Bill 107, an act relating to professions and occupations.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 56, being original House Bill 107. I so signed. House Enrolled Act number 57.
House Enrolled Act number 57, being original House Bill 126, an act relating to elections.
I've already signed House Enrolled Act number 57, being original House Bill number 126. I so signed. House Enrolled Act number 58.
House rolled in Act number 58, being original House Bill 139, an act relating to unemployment compensation.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 58, being original House Bill number 139. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act number 59.
House Enrolled Act number 59, being original House Bill 146, an act relating to the Uniform Trust Code.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 59, being original House Bill 146. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act number 60.
House Enrolled Act number 60, being original House Bill 88, an act relating to public health and safety.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 60, being original House Bill number 88. I so signed. House Enrolled Act number 61.
House Enrolled Act number 61, being original House Bill 77, an act relating to the Wyoming retirement system.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 61, which was original House Bill number 77. House Enrolled Act number 62.
House Enrolled Act number 62, being original House Bill 225, an act relating to law enforcement.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 62, being original House Bill 225. So signed. House Enrolled Act number 63.
House Enrolled Act number 63, being original House Bill 44, an act relating to taxation.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 63, being original House Bill number 44. I've so signed. House Enrolled Act number 64.
House Enrolled Act number 64, being original House Bill 32, an act relating to public health.
This is the last bill, and then I think we'll go to a motion, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. House Enrolled Act number 64, being original House Bill number 32. I'm about ready to sign. So signed. That takes care of all the enrolled acts. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I think you have a motion for reconsideration.
Mr. President, I do. Mr. President, having voted on the prevailing side on House Bill 186, I move for reconsideration. And, Mr. President, I misspoke. I misspoke when I was debating the bill, and I had looked at a bill that had been amended, and the discussion that I had and what I said, my colleague from Albany County was correct. The language is identical. I just wanted the body to know. And so that's why the reconsideration vote, Mr. President.
Give me the House bill again, number.
186.
186. Motion's been made to reconsider House Bill 186, and you've been asked to vote aye. Roll call.
Anderson, District 2. Anderson, District 28.
No.
Barnard. Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
No.
Cooper.
No.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstetter.
No.
Driscoll excused. Emmerich.
No.
Escobel.
Aye.
Geis.
No.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Kinski.
Aye.
Landon. Meyer?
No.
Pappas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Fladern?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
No.
President Nicholas?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 14 aye, 15 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you fail to reconsider House Bill 186. We're at that order of businesses of concurrences. Okay, before we go to the concurrences, we would like to have read in a, it was a concurrence report? A corrected Joint Conference Committee report. We're going to read that in first, then we're going to go to the concurrences.
February the 26th, 2015, from the House of Representatives, message number 409, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, Senate File Number 5, Quebec Number 1, Historic Site 3. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee Number 1 report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 54, noes 4, excused 2.
Okay. Are you ready on the concurrences?
Okay. That's one that has a number on it, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Message number 401 on Senate File 27. Senator Anderson, 28, are you ready on that?
Yes, Mr. President.
If the clerk would please read in the report.
February the 26th, 2015, from the House of Representatives. Message number 401, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 27, Vietnam Veterans Welcome Home Highway. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, do I move the
concurrence?
Yes, you moved. I moved the concurrence.
Mr. Chairman, I move concurrence number 401 to Senate file number 127, Vietnam Veterans Welcome Home Highway, and ask for your favorable vote on this concurrence. Mr. Chairman, or Mr. President, they changed a few things on it, made it a little better that the Veterans Commission would have some consultation on the signage. That's just fine. We're in agreement on that, and I'd ask for your favorable consideration. Thank you.
Any discussion? The motion is that Senate do concur with message number 401 on Senate file number 27, Vietnam Veterans Welcome Home Highway. And you've been asked to vote aye. If the clerk would please call the chief clerk, please call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstetter.
Aye.
Driscoll excused. Emmerich.
Aye.
Escobel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert. Hicks.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Kinski.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Pappas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Platern.
Aye.
Wasserberger.
Aye.
President Nicholas.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 29 aye, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred with Senate file number 27, which is encompassed within message number 401. Message number 407 on Senate file 30, Camp Guernsey. Senator Meyer, are you ready?
Yes, I am, Mr. President.
If the clerk would please read in the message.
Better get turned on. February the 26th, 2015, from the House of Representatives. Message number 407, concurrence requested, Mr. President. Senate file 30, Camp Guernsey Range Management Fund. Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 42, no 16, excuse 2. The House respectfully asks Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move for the concurrence on message 407 for Senate File 30 and ask the body to vote no. Mr. President, the House did essentially two things. One was a report to JAC. That's no problem. One was to move the sunset a couple of years to correspond with the length of the leases that were on the camp. But the other one, Mr. President, I think they probably went a little bit too far as where the Senate position was, and that was to take away the distribution of the funds to the general fund and put all of the funds into the camp fund. And I thought our body spoke fairly clear there that we wanted to make sure that we got a return on that land, which would be the average return is what we'd have on our other leases around the state, and the balance over that would go to the camp fund. So that's what they did, Mr. President, and I think we need to go down there and explain the Senate position and ask you to vote no.
Nope.
The motion is that the Senate do concur with Senate file number 30, and you've been asked to vote no. Will the chief clerk please call the roll?
Anderson, District 2.
No.
Anderson, District 28.
No.
Barnard.
No.
Bebout.
No.
Burns.
No.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
No.
Coe.
No.
Kraft. I'm sorry, Cooper.
No.
Kraft. Dockstetter. Driscoll excused. Emmerich.
No.
Escobel.
No.
Geis.
No.
Hastert.
No.
Hicks.
No.
Johnson.
Aye.
Kinski.
No.
Landon.
No.
Meyer.
No.
Pappas.
No.
Perkins.
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
No.
Scott?
No.
Von Fladern?
No.
Wasserberger?
No.
President Nicholas?
No.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 2 ayes, 27 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have failed to concur with Senate File 30. Message number 402, Senator Case, are you ready?
Yes, sir.
Will the reading clerk please read it in?
February the 26th, 2015, from the House of Representatives, message number 402, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 45, Digital Information Privacy Task Force Reappropriation. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Case.
Mr. President, thank you. I would move the concurrence report message number 402 to Senate File 45, Digital Information Privacy Task Force Reappropriation. And ask the Senate to vote aye. All the amendments offered by our friends down the hall are simply to add that a copy of the report produced by the task force would also go to the appropriation committee. That's the entirety of it. Ask for your favorable consideration.
Any further discussion? The question is, shall the Senate concur on Senate file number 45? And you've been asked to vote aye. Is that what you said?
Yes, Mr. President.
Obviously, my retention time is getting close. You've been asked to vote aye.
Anderson District 2?
Aye.
Anderson District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll excused Emmerich?
Aye.
Escobel? Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Kinski?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Fladern?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Nicholas?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 29 aye, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred with Senate File number 45. We have one more yet. Messages. There we go. That's what I thought. Senate File 119. Senator Scott, are you ready?
Yes, Mr. President.
If the reading clerk would please read it in.
February the 26th, 2015, from the House of Representatives, message number 406, concurrence requested, Mr. President. Senate File 119, Hospice Respite Care. Senate file listed above passed on third reading in amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 58, excused 2. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendment. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate do concur with House amendments on Senate File 119, Hospice Respite Care. And, Mr. President, I ask the Senate to vote aye. This was the bill to allow the hospices in the state with temporarily surplus capacity to do respite care for gravely ill patients. The House added a cautionary amendment. They wanted to make sure that these programs weren't going to get into the government programs, read Medicaid and Medicare, and run up the cost of those. The intention of the ones I'm knowledgeable about is that they don't intend to do that because the government programs don't pay well enough, to be blunt about it. It's private patients that they're interested in, so this amendment will do no harm. There might be a little problem in some of the smaller counties if their local hospice that does home visits were to want to do some swapping with the local home health care people on a temporary basis. But I don't think that's a serious problem. And if it is, we can correct it later. This accomplishes the purpose of the bill, and I urge the Senate to vote aye.
Any discussion? The motion is that the Senate do concur with Senate file number 119, Hospice Respite Care, which is encompassed within House or message number 406. And you've been asked to vote aye. Roll call.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstetter.
Aye.
Driscoll excused. Emmerich.
Aye.
Escobel.
No.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert. Hicks,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Kinski,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Pappas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Pladern,
aye.
Wasserberger,
aye.
President Nicholas.
Aye.
Closing vote closed. 28 aye, 1 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred with Senate file number 119, Hospice Respite Care. We have some joint conference committee reports to complete. First item is on House Bill 73, Development of Education Standards. Senator Wasserberger, are you ready?
Thank you, Mr. President. I am ready.
Okay, let's have it read in.
I am uniquely ready, Mr. President. On this one, I would move
You're so ready, we won't even get it read in.
Oh, read it in, Mr. President.
There you go.
Joint Conference Committee Report, House Bill 73, Development of Education Standards, reference Senate Message Number 245. Signing for the House, Representative Harshman, Croker, and Northrop. Signing for the Senate, Senators Wasserberger, Bebout, and Cole.
Senator Wasserberger.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move Senate Message Number 245 to House Bill 73, Development of Education Standards, and would ask the body to vote aye. Mr. President, this is where the Senate Standing Committee took out the unique language, and then we put it back in on the floor, and the House has concurred with that. When we met as a body, as a group, we made the incredible move to from 8 years to 10 years, and Mr. President, we uniquely split the difference at 9 years. So I would ask the body to uniquely vote yes.
Any discussion? The motion is the Senate do adopt Joint Conference Committee report. Senator Scott, thank you.
Mr. President, the report says delete the following Senate amendments. Could you explain a little what that's about, please?
Looks like a full roll. Any other discussion before this? He takes a second time. Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on this bill, you may recall that there was what was referred to as the Harshman Amendment on House Bill 73, and that was a standing committee put that back in. And then we went ahead and we changed it from 10 to 8 years. That's the second reading amendment number one. And then the third reading amendment number one is where we put the Harshman Amendment back in. And we deleted all three of those so the bill goes back to the way it was when it came over from the House. And we took the 10 and split with 8 and came up with 9.
Further discussion? There being none, the motion is that the Senate do adopt Joint Conference Committee report on House Bill 73, which is part of Senate message number 245. And you've been asked to vote aye. Roll call.
Anderson, District 2?
Aye.
Anderson, District 28?
No.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns? Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll? Excused. Emmerich?
Aye.
Escobel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Kinski?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Pappas? Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Fladern?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Nicholas?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 26 aye, 3 no, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee report. Reference Senate message number 245, which relates to House Bill 73, Development of Education Standards. We got some messages. We have some standing committee reports.
February the 26, 2015, Mr. President, Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, to whom was referred House Bill Number 166, engrossed, Electrical Safety and Fire Prevention Amendments, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Hicks, Meyer, Pappas, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. February 26, 2015, Mr. President, your Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, to whom was referred House Bill Number 228, Subdivision Family Exception, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Hicks, Meyer, Pappas, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
Is that it? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, it's 4 o'clock and we're finally at that order of business of bills on general file.
Mr. President, we are. Mr. President, I move the Senate resolve itself and the Committee of the Whole to discuss bills on general file.
Senator Rothfuss. Oh, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Senator Rothfuss.
That sounds like a good plan. Committee of the Whole, please come to order. There you go. There you go. I know. What's it made of? First bill for our consideration is House Bill 212. Will the reading clerk please read the House bill?
House Bill Number 212, Workers' Compensation Claim Apportionment, sponsored by Senator Larson.
Representative Larson.
Representative Lloyd Larson.
That's the one.
It was referred to Committee Number 9, Mineral Business Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Cole, Cooper, Rothfuss, Von Flatiron, Senator Von Flatiron, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Von Flatiron?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 212 and gross workers' compensation claim apportionment. And there is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that it be read in now.
House Bill 212, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 2, line 6.
Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Number 1 to House Bill 212 and to explain the bill and the amendment.
Senator Anderson, 28, the floor is yours.
Mr. Chairman, this bill, House Bill 212, is to protect the innocent. The safety culture we have in Wyoming from the international and national energy companies is a good one. They work hard to make sure that safety is the first thing that their employees do and that their contractors and subcontractors do. Safety is what they're all about. The important thing for our contractors that are in the state employing our employees is their experience modification rating that is one of the measures that our national and international energy companies use to see if they're really safe. So the companies are very protective of this EMR rating. We have a problem with that rating in this state. The rating is their incidences and their severity of those incidents. So the severity, of course, is how many dollars is spent on the case, and it's a three-year rolling average. We don't need to get into all those details, but that's the measure that they're measuring. The problem that we have is in an accident where our employee is in an accident at no cause of his own and no cause that the company did. An example of that would be an accident on the highway where our employee is in his vehicle and he is rammed by another vehicle. Obviously, he has neck and back pain. He goes to the doctor. It all goes on to workman's comp. It goes against the employer's account. The employer has this account. It's being paid out of the insurance pool, but they show it as an accident chargeable to him. Now, he has a problem with that because he didn't cause the accident and his employee didn't cause the accident. Another party caused the accident. In the case that I'm saying, the insurance company reimburses the workman's comp fund, but the employer still has that on his account. So what this bill does, and it's all in the amendment, the whole change is in the amendment. The committee did a good job. We worked with the Attorney General. We worked with the maker. We worked with everybody concerned, the Workforce Services, to make this paragraph correct, so that an employer is not charged with that accident where he had no control of the accident. And I'd like to read you line 16 of that amendment. If the division by a preponderance of the evidence determines that an employee's injury was solely caused by a third party and by no fault of the chargeable employer or its employees, the injury shall not be charged to the employer's account. Now, that is a really big deal for the employers because then their account is reduced by that incident and that severity, and they are not charged with that accident. It does not change a single thing for workman's comp, how they pay, how they collect, anything like that. It just changes the employer's EMR and his rating that is used for safety issues with every master contract that we have with energy companies. So that's what the bill does. I request that you give it a favorable consideration and vote yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. We are on the Standing Committee Amendment. Any discussion on the Standing Committee Amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Von Flatiron's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 212, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're on House Bill 212. Any discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Von Flatern's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on Standing Committee on House Bill 212, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 212 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 4. The reading clerk will read the House bill.
House Joint Resolution 4, Balanced Budget Amendment Resolution, sponsored by Representative Limholm. It was referred to Committee Number 12, Rules and Procedures, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Nicholas Perkins. No, Senators Kraft and Rothfuss. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a due pass recommendation to House Joint Resolution number 4. There is a standing committee amendment. I ask to be read in at this time.
House Joint Resolution number 4, standing committee amendment number 1 to corrected copy, page 1, line 13.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, to explain the bill and get into the standing committee, I yield to my colleague from up in the northeastern part of the state.
Senator Wasserberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Joint Resolution 4 and ask for your favorable recommendation. And members of the Senate, let me walk you through the amendment. The amendment has some strong language that tries to essentially direct the way the amendment is going and the convention will be controlled by management council and things like that. So anyway, on page 1, line 13, the amendment states, the legislature of the state of Wyoming agrees with and supports the adoption of a balanced budget amendment in the following form. On page 2, line 12, before that, insert subject to the conditions in section 4 of this act, and then the same language on page 3, line 6. On page 3, after line 12, insert and number section 4, little a. The state of Wyoming stands in a unique position apart from all other states in the following respects. The large percentage of land ownership by the federal government is greater than 48% of all the lands in the state. Too little I, federal monies received by this state in compensation for the large percentage of land owned by the federal government, including but not limited to PILT, FMRs, and other payments are inadequate to compensate the state for its lost revenues. Three little I, with a population of less than 600,000, Wyoming maintains an extensive network of highway systems, including more than 3,650 miles of transcontinental interstate highways. Little four, Romanette, Wyoming's budget is small in comparison to other states. And little five, the state of Wyoming should not suffer significant further harm as a result of the participation in the convention to the large percentage of federal land ownership. Section five on page 2, line 1 through 4 states the Wyoming legislature will convene a special session or a regular session to adopt the foregoing amendment, provided that the state can secure adequate assurances that the state's unique stature is protected and recognized. And then on page 2, lines 6 through 18, section 6. Section 6 directs the governor's office to meet with other states on the issue of a balanced budget amendment to ensure a measure of security that PILT money, FMRs, and other federal funding are not at risk at the state. And members of the Senate, I stand for questions on Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Joint Resolution number 4.
Thank you, Senator Wasserberger. We are on the Standing Committee Amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, my apologies, Senator Coe. Senator Coe.
Just a question, because I have to be doing a lot of work on a bill that went through here. You say 3,650 lane miles of transcontinental interstate highways. We don't have that much. It's more like 900. I just wonder where that number came from.
Senator Wasserberger.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know what? We've gone round and round on that number. And the original number was just the interstate highways, which was 900. But for some reason, when we called the YDOT, they said that it was that many. So that's the reason for the number. Yeah, and they're federal highways, and then there's some Can-Am highways and different things like that.
Thank you, Senator Wasserberger. Senator Cooper for a clarification.
Mr. Chairman, I think probably they've added the national highway system, too, which includes other highways like Highway 30, the Lincoln Highway, and things like this. So besides it, I don't know what that number is, but I would be willing to chance that that includes other roads besides just the interstates.
Thank you, Senator Cooper. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Wasserberger's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Joint Resolution 4, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We are back on House Joint Resolution 4. Senator Wasserberger.
Well, members of the Senate, let me walk you through this joint resolution. And, you know, this is actually a very serious issue. And I know that the body sees it in that respect. The resolution calls for an Article 5 convention at the bottom of page 1, lines 13 through 15. And on page 2, the resolution limits the convention to only a balanced budget amendment and allows for a budget to be unbalanced or to run a deficit if the United States is attacked by another country or terrorist attacked either outside the U.S. or inside the U.S. On page 2, lines 12 through 22, it lists the 24 states that have passed a balanced budget amendment. And 2 weeks ago, South Dakota passed its balanced budget amendment, so there are 25 states now. And in order for a convention to be called, an Article 5 convention must have 34 states. Call for a convention, which can be found on page 3, lines 1 through 4. On page 3, section 3, at lines 6 through 12, the resolution continuing application with an Article 5 convention until two-thirds of the states call a balanced budget convention. And on page 3, lines 14 through 20, directs the Secretary of State to send copies of the resolution to the President of the United States, President of the Senate, and the Speaker of the House of Representatives in Congress and also Wyoming's national delegation. And lastly, allow me to take the committee, well, actually, we discussed the committee process yesterday with, I think it was House Bill 121. Anyway, so I'm not going to go through that unless the floor would like me to. So I Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Wasserberger. Discussion on House Joint 4. Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, just a little more discussion and talk a little bit about what your Rules Committee and some of the testimony we heard. And Article 5 is a big deal. And Mr. Chairman, there's a lot of concerns, and they're valid concerns, about a runaway convention. And what you really need to do and protect yourself to the extent you can is you want to have one state, one vote. And that all makes sense. And, of course, when you do that and you if you get the 34 states that you need for the two-thirds to convene the Article 5 convention, that gets you there with one person, one vote. And, of course, the concern becomes once you get into the convention, then the convention may decide to change those particular rules and do different things. And we've heard a lot of testimony that won't happen. There's a lot of arguments why it won't. It's still a possibility. I want the members of the Senate to understand that, and that's why we did the Standing Committee Amendment to afford protection of Wyoming. And if you think about it, members of the Senate, we offer a whole lot to be one of the 34 states that would get you in an Article 5, but we stand to lose, theoretically, so much that other states aren't in the position to lose like we would, and that's the purpose of putting that language in that we see in the Standing Committee Amendment. A lot of us feel like we ought to have a balanced budget amendment. We ought to consider that and do that and move forward, but in the same sense, we're concerned about what might happen to our state, and there is that possibility out there. It's real. I can only tell you that the testimony we heard in the committee from several different people in different aspects, and, of course, I think there are 25 or 26 states now that have done this, that's a very remote possibility. But I just want members of the Senate to understand the rationale behind the Standing Committee Amendment, some of the exposure we have and where this is all sitting in terms of having an Article 5 constitutional convention.
Thank you, Senator Bebout. Additional discussion. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, to the good senator from Fremont County, we actually had this discussion yesterday when you were off the floor. Is the checks and balances that the founders had put in an Article 5 constitutional convention, but I'll just reiterate those again. Number one, this just calls for the convention. If the convention took place, they still have to have 34 states that agree on exactly what that amendment would look like to the Constitution. At that point in time, then it has to be ratified. And the two processes for ratification that the founders put in there again was to raise the bar even higher, that either two-thirds of the Senate and two-thirds of the House and Congress would have to approve that, or the other would be put out to ratification by three-quarters of the states, 38 states. So the idea that somehow that we're going to overturn the Constitution or stuff, that the founders foresaw that is like everything we do in our form of government, that you establish a form of checks and balances. That's why Article 5 is in there. The reason that Article 5 and this proponent that allows a state's convention, the legal history on this, and if you go back and read Madison and Jefferson and Washington on this, was for the very reason that we're talking about. It's to provide the states the opportunity when the federal government gets out of control. The mechanism to come in here and allow the states to say we're going to regain control of whatever provision it is that we feel that the federal government is out of bounds. I would remind the members of the body that there is four amendments to the Constitution that exist today that already are partially or entirely the result of an Article 5 states convention. There's never been one. It's unlikely that there'll be one. If we ever get to 34, what it effectively says is that Congress has abrogated their authority to govern anymore. But because of Article 5, it's the best tool we have out there. Our government has incurred over $18 trillion in debt, $90 trillion in unfunded liabilities, printed $4.5 trillion of the Federal Reserve. You know, we had some discussion the other day about what happens if we do this and we do a balanced budget and they come and steal our FMRs. Folks, they're already headed down that road. We're looking at another debt ceiling battle coming up. We're going to $20 trillion. How do you suppose at some point in time you're going to pay for this? The reason the Federal Reserve Bank is printing money and buying our debt is because no foreign country will buy our bonds and treasuries anymore. So you can pick your poison here. You can either stand up to the plate and say, we're going to participate, or we're going to try to regain control and some common sense to what's going on in Washington, D.C., and allow the states to bring that. Or we can continue down this track to complete unregulated spending by the federal government to the point they are going to come and get our FMRs, because there's no other solution. Pick your poison. This is the right thing to do, and it's the right time in history, and it's not unique in our history. The state of Wyoming has suspended over 9 different resolutions at different times. In our history, we've dealt with this issue before. In 77 and 79, the state of Wyoming and this body submitted resolutions for an Article 5. And you know why? Because we had unregulated, unprecedented spending by the federal government. As a result of those petitions, we got to 30 states that had petitioned for an Article 5, and guess what Congress did? They passed the Graham-Rudman Act, the Balanced Budget Act. At that point in time, the states started to retract and rescind their applications, and guess what happened? Within a couple years, we're right back to the same scenario of borrow and spend, borrow and spend. We don't even borrow anymore. We just print and buy our own debt. This is a solution that's big enough to the problem. I would ask you to adopt this. Stand in favor of the bill.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, on and for the bill. I like the idea and the concept of the Article 5 and the calling for a convention. Find it funny that this is probably the only one out of the four that my name wasn't on. So maybe that's why it was selected
by
our committee.
It's a coincidence.
But, Mr. Chairman, my one concern is, as I studied this,
before I came down here is the aggregation process of how these states are combined and aggregated into reaching that goal of 34. And with these amendments, will this application be considered and aggregated into the 34? Or, you know, the list is on page two of the states that have already signed on to a balanced budget amendment. But, you know, I myself and others on this floor, I'm sure, haven't seen their applications. And who's doing the counting? And I'm thinking there's probably going to be some legals back in D.C. that will find any excuse by taking this application with these amendments and saying that, well, it mentions balanced budget, but, you know, there's just some other things that are unique in this application, so we're going to set this off to the side, and there's one. And then here's two, and they're different. And so we don't ever reach our 34. So that's my concern with this particular application is the aggregation and how it's counted and who does that counting. And my question is to the committee, was that addressed in this particular application, and was that a concern that was brought up, and was there somebody there that was able to answer that question?
Further questions or discussion? Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, just a question. The objections I hear to this are that we do not have enough population to have any control over the Article 5 convention, and that the convention goers that go actually can make the decision on how they're going to work the convention when they get there. And maybe we could have a little more discussion on that how do we hold it to just that one discussion, and how do we keep the convention attendees from not changing that?
Thank you, Senator Anderson. Further discussion on House Joint Resolution 4, Balanced Budget Amendment Resolution, Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I have great concern about this. First of all, about, as the senator from Carbon County said, yes, this legislature has called for Article 5 conventions before, but we rescinded all those previous calls. There were 10 previous calls for a constitutional convention for various reasons over the years, and we rescinded that. We rescinded those calls. There is a legal question out there, frankly, whether or not we can rescind those, whether that was legal to do that, because other states have also done it. If I had confidence that the states were going to gather and in this convention and only address that one issue, the national debt, and have a balanced budget amendment, I would be all for this. I'd be all over it. But that's not the way things work. It's not that easy. It's not that clean. Now, you can sit there and say Washington said this and Madison said that and Jefferson said this. The only language that people go by and the only language the courts go by and especially in Washington is Article 5 of the Constitution. They don't care what the Federalist Papers said because they're also listening to things by people with names like Pelosi and Chomsky and Obama, who don't necessarily agree with what an Article 5 convention on a balanced budget would be, but they sure would like the idea of an Article 5 convention. And if I was sitting on the floor of the legislature in Texas, I'd be sitting there saying, wow, Wyoming's going to have the same vote we are? Gee, that's great. No, I don't think they're going to be thinking that. And people from California and other large population states are not going to be wanting Wyoming to have the same votes we have. As a matter of fact, you hear right around election time every year, you hear complaints in the media about just the Electoral College and how unfair that is and a dictatorship by the small states and how one Wyoming vote is worth three times what a California vote is. Do you really think that's going to suddenly stop because of a constitutional convention? No. Constitutional convention, in my mind and my concern, is going to be a festival for opportunists. And there are a whole bunch of amendments in the Constitution that they'd sure like to get rid of, especially in the first 10, that we hold relatively sacred. Let's be very careful here. We are fooling around with the DNA of this government. And I think that we should take this very seriously, and not be in the position of, if you disagree with this, you're trying to defend the national debt and you're trying to defend the federal government and what they do. That's not the case. But we are trying to defend our rights. And a constitutional convention, once they get in there, you can sit there and say anything you want about it. It's being restricted to just this one question. I don't buy that, and I don't believe it.
Thank you, Senator Burns. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I won't attempt to match the rhetoric of the good senator from Sheridan County, but I will say that I very much agree with his sentiment, and I don't think we're going to be able to control it. I think if the Congress calls it and says that the representation will be proportional to the population, we're in real trouble. I think they might do just that. Mr. Chairman, so I have two other concerns on this. You know, the Constitution has served us very well for better than 200 years. And one of the reasons it has is it is very limited. It sets up a framework for government. It guarantees some fundamental rights. It doesn't make the mistake of legislating details. That's one of the reasons it stood the test of time. And it has stood the test of time so well, I'm very reluctant to mess with it. Now, this country is the most powerful nation on earth. This country, in terms of individual rights and individual freedom, is the most radical country on the face of this earth. And that's one of the things that's made us the most successful. And we're talking about messing with the fundamental document that makes it that way. And for that reason, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to vote against all these resolutions to call constitutional conventions for whatever purpose. And then in addition to this one, on this one, I don't think the language on page 2 of the amendment that's proposed is something. I sure couldn't vote to ratify anything that said that. It would get us in real trouble. You know, it takes about national emergencies not limited to an attack by a foreign nation or terrorist organization. Now, terrorist organization, those words wouldn't have been there. They weren't there 30 years ago when we made the mistake of passing one of these. Fortunately, we then rescinded. That's a response to the particular circumstance. What's going to be the circumstance 30 years from now? And looking back, if we'd had this in our Constitution, could we have won the Cold War? It wasn't a national emergency for the whole Cold War, but we sure needed to do a bunch of spending on occasion in order to be safe, Mr. Chairman. And I really wonder about what we're doing here. We've got a major problem, we all know, with the national debt and the way they're financing it by debasing the currency by just printing more. The remedy for that, Mr. Chairman, is to vote the scoundrels out and replace them and keep doing it until they get it right back there. But this thing is dangerous. I'd urge you no vote in this.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be brief. I couldn't agree more with the statement by the gentleman from Sheridan. I think he stated it eloquently, as well as the gentleman from Natrona County. And as we look at this, here we stand, one of the smaller states in regard to population, one of the most blessed states in regard to assets and natural resources. I liken that to be the smallest
kid on the playground with the most lunch money when there are a lot of bullies on the loose. So I would urge you to vote against all of this.
We're on House Joint Resolution 4. I'm going to go to Senator Wassenberger, then I'll go to Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To respond to a lot of the issues that the floor has, to my good friend from Natrona County that was talking about the Cold War, we actually had balanced budgets in 1947, 1948, 1951, 1956, and 1957. The first 3 years in the 40s, those were Truman years, and the last two were Eisenhower years. Those were the last years we had a balanced budget. To my good friend from Sheridan County, who's worried about proportional representation, talking about the Electoral College. 11 states elect the President of the United States. Of those 11 states, they can render 271 votes. 11 states elect the President. 39 states are left over. And it is advantageous for those states when they go to that state convention to have one vote, one state. So the vast majority of the states that benefit from one vote, one state are 39. You know, it's crazy. When I first came down here 18 years ago, we had a debt of $3 trillion. And now it's $18 trillion. The last $4.5 trillion, the Federal Reserve just printed up. They called it quantitative easing, QE1, QE2, and QE infinity for the third one. What's crazy is we have two choices and neither of them are good. We could call a convention of the states and ask one subject on a balanced budget amendment, or we can watch our nation go bankrupt. And then they'll take our FMRs, and then they'll take our PILT, and then they'll take our abandoned mine land money. And they can do that now anyway. So our choices are horrible. They're not very good. And so I would say that you can vote her up or you can vote her down, but I've always been in favor of a balanced budget amendment. And that's not going to go away with this going pass or fail. But I would like you to think about federalism and since 1787, the federal government, through various different acts and wars and events, and because of the Supremacy Clause in the Constitution itself, states' rights have gone by the wayside. And this, literally, is the only way I can see that we might get states' rights back. The fact that the states called a convention. And at that point in time, I would remind the body, Congress only has two choices. They can name the site of the convention and the date and time. They do not set the rules. The convention itself does, but the first act is by vote by state. So the 39 states have the overwhelming majority. So on and in favor of the bill.
Thank you, Senator Wassenberger. Yeah, Mr. President. Mr. President, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I apologize for not being here at the tire debate, and if I repeat some things, I apologize. As I understand it, talking to my neighbors on both sides, is that the Standing Committee Amendment has been adopted. The committee amendment has been proposed is not in itself a call for the convention. It does say that we're in generally support of the balanced budget and that we would be prepared to adopt an amendment substantially in the form that's already been adopted by multiple states if we can provide certain assurances. From everything that I've done the research and what I've read over the last month or so, it appears to me that states can define, make a call for a constitution for a limited subject matter. And when they arrive at the convention, the first vote is the rules. And that first vote will be state by state. And after that, it's a rodeo. And it's a rodeo that maybe all the rough stock or somebody you can control or you can't. The presumption of the folks that want to advance the proposal is that all the rough stock are just like yourselves. They'll all buck together, and at least 51 of them will end up at the end of the day with the same objective, and that is a balanced budget amendment. What's also clear is that the issue of a ballot, what the amendment should look like, is very complex, and we're years away from knowing exactly what that clause should look like. Again, the assumption is that, like our forefathers, bright people will go there and come out with something that's just phenomenal and will change the direction of the company or country. But I also know that when you look at Wyoming's future looking out the next 1, 2, 10, 50 years, we have a problem. And our problem is that more than 40% of our land is owned by the federal government. And even if you take out the national forests, you take out the state parks, they control so much of our property that it's very difficult to get to figure out where we're going to go. And each time that, even under current circumstances, every time that there's an effort for a senator or a House member to go out and fund their project, they need to find a cash source, and the cash source almost always looks like our federal mineral royalties or abandoned mine alignment landmines, because that's actually cash in the bank. There are processes there where we could protect ourselves. I think the law is such that if Congress were to go in and amend our Constitution, our Articles of Admission, our Act of Admission, and we ratified it, we could change our Constitution to similar to Alaska that says we're guaranteed that income source. And to change that wouldn't take everybody in Congress. It'd only take a majority. And it seems to me that we have a lot of creative minds now that are talking to other states and talking about states that have similar interests to us. And this may be a time different than any time that I've seen in our history to take advantage of the fact that we are and I apologize to my Democratic colleagues, but we are a deeply, deeply Republican state. We're deeply conservative, we're committed to a balanced budget, but we also have a unique set of circumstances that we need to see if we can take control of it. And if you talk to the delegation, our federal delegation, no matter what happens, they need to figure out, as their votes as two senators are important, and they're constantly trying to find a way to protect our minerals, our income. And maybe this is an opportunity to say, look, we are interested in playing with the red states, if you will, but only if we can secure protections that are lasting. Whether it works or not, this is the time to devote some energy to that. This is an opportunity that I've never seen before. And so the amendment comes to you with the idea that we arm our delegation. We send them and tell them, look, we are interested in the balanced budget.
And we'll convene a special session. We'll come down at any time, and we'll adopt it if we think that it's in our best interest. But it's not going to be our best interest unless we know what that rodeo is going to look like. And that rodeo cannot be an effort simply to balance even a quarter of 1% of the budget on our revenues. You know, I think people miss, you know, they see Wyoming out there. They see we have a balanced budget. They assume that we're spending billions and billions, and we're not. We're pretty small. While these revenues are significant to us, they're insignificant to the U.S. set of revenues. And our first vote is the important one. The first vote for the we're getting courted like we've never been. That first vote is the important. Once it's gone, maybe the Rostock are all together and you're with them at the end of the day, and all works out. But that first vote is what people want. That is the call. And we ought to be paying attention to it. And if this, if we come back, we can have this debate again. One thing about it is that we're going to, each day that goes by, every state that adds on to this coalition, we learn more. We'll know more as we go along, but right now, it does seem to me that, you look at a majority of the folks in Wyoming, they believe that federal debt is out of control. We need to do things extraordinary. We need to bring attention. Will this satisfy our colleagues? No. But if our other red states are unprepared to come to our aid and develop a method to protect our interests, it tells us a lot about what that rodeo is going to look like, and maybe tell us that rodeo is not something we want to participate in.
Further discussion. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I'm confused on something here. The statement was made that this isn't, or maybe I didn't understand it, but that this wasn't a call. The Standing Committee Amendment. The Standing Committee Amendment put in the language the legislature of Wyoming agrees with and generally supports the adoption of balanced budget amendment subject to the following form, and then it doesn't omit, doesn't delete the next language, which is that pursuant to Article 5 of the Constitution of the United States, the legislature of the state of Wyoming petitions the Congress of the United States to call a convention. So that language is still there. So I maybe I'm totally confused by the effect of the amendment, but I just, this is sounds like a dead serious call, and this generally supports language seems somewhat superfluous and contradictory to what follows next. Mr. Chairman, I'd like some clarification on what the effect of that amendment really was.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, we could track this in, and we need to be very careful how it tracks in. But what it is intended to say is that on the amendment, the legislature of the state of Wyoming agrees with and generally supports the adoption of a balanced budget amendment substantially in the following form. And this following form is intended to be Section 1. So I think I will go back and we should double check and make sure that it's not an adoption, but then turn over to the amendment page 2, lines 1 through 4. That is, the Wyoming legislature will convene in a special or regular session to adopt the foregoing amendment, provided the state can secure adequate assurances that the state's unique stature is protected and recognized. And things that I have in mind are things like congressional act and maybe a change in one language in our act of admission that was ratified so we have a contract. And whether we accomplish that role or not, the exercise is well worth it to use the energy and that is out there for among these red states to say, you lose nothing by helping us amend that act to put one provision back in our Constitution to make it look, for example, like Alaska's,
where our revenues are guaranteed, or give us some of our land back. And once we have that security, we will adopt the amendment. Now, of course, if you don't believe we'll ever draft it, I don't know that you should say that. But if there's sufficient number that believes that we ought to have the a balanced budget amendment in the Constitution, then this, I submit, is the approach to be taken. I don't think this is something that you take lightly. I don't think it's something that you would vote for if you don't support a balanced budget amendment. But let's make, I'll double check, we'll track this thing in, but the Standing Committee amendment is not intended to be an actual call. It means to simply say that we're prepared to do it, but there's some things that we need to do first before we pull that trigger. And if we come back, frankly, and nobody's interested in helping us, if the delegation can't find a way to protect our resources and the wealth that we've essentially lost, if you will, because the federal government has such a large ownership of our state, if we can't get that, that tells us something about what might happen at that convention. So we have nothing but to learn, but it is intended not to be an actual call, and I look to my colleagues for assistance in making sure that we've done it right.
Thank you, President Nicholas. Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, with all due respect to the amendment drafting skill of the Rules Committee, I think that it is still an actual call because they left in the language that says, pursuant to Article 5 of the Constitution of the United States, the legislature of the state of Wyoming petitions the Congress of the United States, America, at its sessions to call a convention of the states to propose amendment to the Constitution of the United States, etc. You left in the call language. The amendment doesn't track as well as it might and causes some confusion, but I think with that language still there, this bill as it stands before us is a call for an Article 5 convention. And that the other language is really just rhetoric. So I have grave concerns about that. And I also have grave concerns about the assumption that the Congress in its call can't specify something other than one state, one vote. I think they might well put in their call that it's one man, one vote. And that's the way the representation will be determined.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Any additional discussion on House Joint Resolution 4? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I think that's an easy remedy on this. If you just basically say that's not going to take place as far as a call until after a date certain, after we've left this, and then that's an easy remedy.
Senator Wasserberger.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just real quick, there's been considerable discussion about a runaway convention, and I really don't think that that's an issue. Anything that is done by the convention, any amendment or multiple amendments or an entire new constitution, if that's the way it goes, which I don't think it could, has to be ratified by 38 states. Congress, at that point in time, once the convention is over, has the choice. They have two choices. They can have everything at that convention ratified by state legislatures or by state convention. And that's the process. And you have to have all 38 states support that. And they can support it one at a time. So it's impossible for a runaway convention to have success. You could have a runaway convention, but I don't think you're going to get anything passed.
Do I hear a call for the question?
Question.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to answer some of the statements that were made about, you know, that the Constitution sets up the framework and you know, we don't want to be messing with the Constitution. This is one of the common themes that you hear out there. If you want to go bump in the night and you want to scare people from an Article 5, you don't want to mess with that Constitution. Let's talk about that. Article 5. Application of the legislatures. The two-thirds of the several states shall convene a convention for proposing amendments. That is the Constitution. This is not bump in the night. The framework was established in the Constitution for an Article 5. We're not talking about changing the Constitution. We're talking about implementing the Constitution of the United States of America. This is not to overturn it or change the framework. It's to implement the Constitution that the framers of this country give us. So let's just make that clear. This is not something that's going outside of the Constitution. It is consistent. It's in there, and this is what the purpose were. Let's talk about the rodeo, folks. We may very well show up at the rodeo. But, you know, having some experience with rodeo in my younger day, I always applied, got in, and had some control over the dates and the time and the stock I drew. Folks, it takes 34 states. We can either join the rodeo or we get thrown in there and get trampled. Because if there's 34 states, we're going to have a convention. Control your own destiny here. Get educated on Article 5 and what we can and can't do. And we are over 40% federal government. But we shouldn't be the territory of Wyoming. We should be the state of Wyoming. We should quit going to Washington, D.C. and saying, Oliver, please give me some more porridge, Mr. Washington, D.C. We should exercise our legal rights under the Constitution of the United States. And the states have a convention and send a clear and resounding message to Washington, D.C. that the states are really serious about this balanced budget issue. On and for the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I know it's late, and I apologize for having been called off the floor. I hope I don't repeat anything, but I do want to rise just with a couple of thoughts. I appreciate the work that you've done to pass the Standing Committee Amendment. I hope it does what we think it does, which is we don't implement until we come back down here and know exactly what we're doing. You know, in my graduate school classes, fellow senators, I took a couple of courses in political economy, and I learned just enough to know that you don't want to try to describe political economy down at the coffee shop. You can't do it. It's a pretty deep and involved topic. And I would only say this, and this is the caution. Whenever you start talking about a balanced budget, you're talking about a whole lot more things there than I think we can really resolve tonight. A balanced budget, you do that. And there's some significant things in our history that really would not have happened. You think about FDR, you think about Eisenhower and all those highways that were built. You date back all the way to Lincoln, and we might be two countries. You take that flexibility away, you just got to know what you're doing there. So that's how much I learned, with just a little bit like that, and I just wanted to share that with the body. So I don't know how I'm going to go on third reading, but you know, this balanced budget visit is a whole lot deeper, I think, sometimes than some of our constituents realize. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Landon. Are we ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Joint Resolution Number 4, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
House Joint Resolution 4 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 81. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill Number 81, Wyoming Lottery Distribution, sponsored by Representative Petroff. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senator Kinski, Landon, and Peterson. No, Senator Case. Excuse, Senator Driscoll, Senator Peterson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the House bill. Senator Peterson, what is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the committee of the whole rises report that do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 81, Wyoming Lottery Distributions. And for further explanation on this bill, I would turn the time over to Senator Emmerich.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The essence of this bill is on page 2, line 6, with a date change of 2019 to 2022, and on line 21, the same. That is essentially the bill. Now, let me explain why this is needed. When we passed the lottery bill 2 years ago, we actually said, go forth and be productive, and we won't give you any money, but you can give us money when you get to a certain point. Well, that kind of left the Lottery Commission with a long uphill battle. We essentially hired them as an independent contractor. So on July 1st, we had the Lottery Act go into effect. The board was assembled in July and August. And here's the point. In August and September, they secured Lottery Secura startup funds from a bank that is named after a biblical person. This was after 3 or 4 attempts at other banking institutions who said, you got any collateral? Nope, we can't loan you any money. So this bank did loan approximately $3 million to the lottery board. And some of these costs, vendor compensation, marketing, background searches, loan repayment, prize payment, reserves, gross payments, and things of that sort. Well, all of this came about, and we finally began sale in August of 2014. And I did hand out a brief rundown of where the lottery stands in the present and what our projections are into 15. The disbursements have not occurred according to the original bill of 2013 because, wonder of wonders, this bank has asked to be prepaid, to be paid first before any distributions. They don't want loaned money going out in distributions. And I think that's a sound financial thought. So the purpose of the bill is to extend the period of time to pay back to the cities and towns and counties and to the school fund any proceeds that come from this sale of lottery tickets. They have not even finished paying off their initial loan. And so as soon as they do, then there's a possibility that this distribution will come. Remember, Senators, when we set this lottery up, we didn't quite know what we were going to have. They are, as I mentioned, an independent contractor. I don't want to hear the crying. I just want to see the baby, and I don't have any choices on how you do it. So this is the bill to extend the dates until 2022, and I urge your support.
Any discussion on House Bill 81, Wyoming Lottery Distributions? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 81, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 81 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 205. The reading clerk will read the House bill.
House Bill number 205, Revisers Bill, sponsored by the Management Council. It was referred to Committee number 12, Rules and Procedures, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Kraft, Nicholas, Perkins, and Rumpus. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Senator Nicholas, what is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation for House Bill number 205, the Revisor's Bill. Revisor bills, folks, come through every year. One of the last bills of the session, the good news is we're getting there. And what happens is through the course of the year, people call around and they said, we just found an error in the statute that you adopted. Or sometimes outside lawyers catch them, sometimes we catch them, and they keep a running list of errors. And sometimes we make mistakes during the session, and then they keep track of it. And this bill is a compilation of statutes where there were errors and changes, and by adopting this, our statutes will become closer to pristine. I urge your support.
Hearing the question called for, all those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 205, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
Oh.
House Bill 205, despite that, has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 228.
House Bill number 228, Subdivision Family Exception, sponsored by Representative Gear. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Hicks, Meyer, Pappas, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the House bill. Senator Case, what is your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 228. And Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment I ask to be read in at this time.
House Bill 228, standing committee amendment number 1, page 3, line 1.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the standing committee amendment to House Bill 228, and for an explanation of the bill and the amendment, I'd ask to yield to Senator Scott.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, this House bill is in the subdivision area. We have long since put in the subdivision area an exception to the requirements so that where you've got an agricultural operation, farmer ranch, and the typical example is son or a daughter comes back to get into the business with prospect taking it over, you need to sell them enough land so they can build a house, get a mortgage on it, and it would violate the subdivision rules. Otherwise, you want to preserve that opportunity. And what's happened is that as the tax laws have gotten more complex and the values of the land have gone up, much of the land is not held by individuals anymore. They have gotten as part of their estate planning a trust, and that holds it. And what this is doing is modernizing our statute to conform with that reality. You can see it in the bill on page 2, lines 12 through 15. And what the Standing Committee Amendment does is the other thing that's happened is the land is not necessarily owned by a corporation. That was the preferred means of sharing ownership amongst family members, but there's several other entities like LLCs and limited partnerships that are now in use as well, and that was written to accommodate that, and the Standing Committee Amendment adds the same trust concept in that portion of the statute. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment. I urge its adoption.
We're on the Standing Committee Amendment. Any discussion? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 228, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I think I've explained the bill as well. I'd be happy to answer any questions on it. It really just does recognize what's going on in rural Wyoming. As families try to preserve their ranches in the family and keep the federal government from taking them via the estate tax route.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Any questions or discussion on 228? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 228, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 228 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for your consideration is House Bill 162. The reading clerk will read the House bill.
House Bill Number 162, Providers Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment, sponsored by Representative Wilson. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Kraft, Driscoll, Landon, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a recommendation that House Bill 162 do pass. The Standing Committee Amendment, I ask it be read in at this time.
House Bill 162, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 4, line 3. Oops.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Chairman, I move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. Mr. Chairman, just to briefly explain the Standing Committee Amendment, it goes in on page 4 and says that if you have a one of these forms executed by a patient who forbids changes by a surrogate later on, the surrogate shall not change the thing. Some of the individuals have been very clear on this subject, and we want them to give that ability to, so that when they're at the point where they need a surrogate, that what their wishes were hold. It's not something I would advise people to do, but some people are very firm on it. And we're just giving them that opportunity. I would urge adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Any discussion? Seeing none. We are on the Standing Committee Amendment, so all those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 162, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
Mr. Chairman.
One second, I have to pass it. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Senator Scott.
I yield to Senator Kraft for an explanation of this good little House bill.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. And House Bill 162, POLST. POLST stands for Provider Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment. And the point of this is to use completely voluntary, visible, and portable medical form, and it documents patients' specific desires for their treatment when they may well be in the last years of their life. Now, in 1993, we passed a statute saying that you could sign a form if you didn't want to receive any CPR. Hundreds of people have done it since 1993, and that program's coordinated by the Department of Health, and that program's called Comfort One. This updates that process in light of current medical options. Now, the Comfort One statute very clearly states, and this is important to keep in mind, nothing in this article shall be construed as authorizing euthanasia or mercy killing. That language continues to be in statute with the proposed POLST statute. This is simply moving with the advanced directives. And that was passed in 2005 when we passed the Wyoming Healthcare Decisions Act. And that authorized advanced healthcare directives. Now, an advanced directive is a legal document. But what it doesn't do is it doesn't provide specific medical orders. that can be used in a healthcare setting, it's not part of a person's medical record. So that means when you need it most, it's probably in your safe deposit box and you don't have access to it. The pulse process then moves on from that, and it results in a medical order that gives healthcare professionals the instructions that they need in order to make that advanced directive effective. It's really important to understand that this is the form that folks can use to make sure their wishes are met, documents a variety of conditions, documents medical orders signed by the primary provider. And the primary provider is anyone authorized to write medical orders, co-signed by the patient, and it's in the patient's medical record. So it's important to keep those things in mind, kind of differences between our current practice and what the post bill would do. Currently, providers write the orders, but the patient doesn't have to sign them. This one, patient signature is required. Currently, you don't get a copy of any orders. This one, patient gets a copy of all of these orders. In current law, nurses, EMTs, other healthcare professionals can't take any action based on an advance directive, regardless of what the patient wants. This says nurses and EMTs comply with patient wishes based on medical orders. So that's just this directive in a nutshell. With the amendment, we felt like we covered all bases to make sure that the wishes of the patient when it comes to end-of-life care or treatment are made known. And I would remind you that if there are no wishes made known, or if a portion of it is not, full care, full treatment is always the default. So it always defaults to full care unless the patient specifically authorizes otherwise. So that's the bill in a nutshell. I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Thank you, Senator Kraft. Discussion, Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a little more discussion on 3522505 on page 7, starting with line 10, about the immunity. And I think you understand what it says is that as long as they comply with the orders of Pulse, there shall be immune from any kind of civil liability, so on and so forth. I'm reading that to say only with the form that directs them how to do it. And I just want to be sure that I understand that correctly.
Any additional questions before the floor leader rises? Seeing none, Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. You're absolutely correct, Mr. Floor Leader, Majority Floor Leader.
My apologies. Any additional questions or discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 162, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 162 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for your consideration is House Joint Resolution 1. The reading clerk will please read the House bill. House Joint Resolution.
House Joint Resolution 1, Regulation Freedom, sponsored by Representative Winters.
Thank you. Are we doing one more?
It was referred to Committee Number 12, Rules and Procedures. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Nicholas, and Perkins. No, Senators Kraft and Rothfuss. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the House bill. What is your pleasure? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a favorable recommendation that do pass on House Joint Resolution Number 1, Regulation Freedom. Mr. Chairman, I'll explain this joint resolution. This is different than the earlier discussion we had relative to Article 5, where the states actually call a constitutional convention. Mr. Chairman, what this does is it asks Congress to initiate an amendment process to deal with something that is affecting a lot of states in our country, and specifically Wyoming in many ways. And that's what the federal government is doing through overreach by rulemaking, where Congress, in effect, does not pass laws. They're just quite frankly going by Congress, putting by rule and regulation whatever they want to do by executive order. And what this does, Mr. Chairman, is it said that if you look at it on page 22, line 22, whenever one quarter of the members of the United States House of Representatives or the Senate transmits to the President their written declaration of opposition to a proposed federal regulation, it shall require a majority vote of the House of Representatives, Senate to adopt that regulation. Mr. Chairman, that's what the joint resolution does. It's in place for 7 years. Nothing happens, and it, in fact, will become moot. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Majority. Floor leader, any discussion on House Joint Resolution 1? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Joint Resolution 1, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Joint Resolution 1 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 166. The reading clerk will please read the House bill.
House Bill number 166, Electrical Safety and Fire Prevention Amendments, sponsored by Representative Dan Zwanitzer. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Hicks, Meyer, Pappas, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Senator Case, what is your pleasure?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 166. Electrical Safety and Fire Prevention Amendments, Mr. Chairman. There is a standing committee amendment that's being distributed right now. I think the members have it. I'll speak slowly, and I'd like to ask for that to be read in at this time.
House Bill 166, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy, page 3, line 5.
Mr. Chairman, I'd go ahead and move the standing committee amendment to House Bill 166, and I would ask that you yield to our resident builder, architect, dreammaker, Senator Pappas.
Dreammaker, Senator Pappas, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to walk you through the changes to House Bill 166. Basically, this is a cleanup bill that cleans up language in Title 16 and Title 35 that deals with the Department of Electrical Safety and Fire Prevention issues. First cleanup item, if you go to page 2, the language at the end of line 5 through line 18 is basically outdated language, deals with the American Standard specifications for making buildings and facilities accessible. That standard is basically no longer used. And so what we're doing is deleting all that language and adding at line 18 through 20, accessibility and supplemental accessibility requirements of the 2012 edition of the International Building Code. Just bringing it up to speed. Going on to page 3, we're dealing with on line 4 through 17. There's a lot of language about curbs, ramps, and if you look at from basically the stricken language 9 through 17, all of that language is very redundant language. So the cleanup was to, on the original bill that came to the committee, was to include the rules and regulations promulgated by the Wyoming Department of Transportation. However, under testimony in committee, the Wyoming Department of Transportation does not really promulgate rules regarding accessibility standards. And they leave that to the ADA, the American with Disabilities Act. So the Standing Committee Amendment makes that change that basically reads the curb ramps and linear, or excuse me, designed for curb ramps shall be designed in accordance with the current Americans with the Disabilities Act accessibility guidelines, period. And then the rest of the rest of the paragraph is deleted. Next change would be down on line 19. Basically, the inspections that are done by fire marshals or city engineers are really done by people in their offices, inspectors that they hire. The actual city The actual city engineer or the fire marshal typically does not go out and do the inspections, so we're really basically allowing their designee to do the inspections. In line 23, we're just adding the inspection of a curb ramp by the city at the request of any person on that paragraph, so that any person that has an issue can request an inspection. Going on to page 4, lines 5 through 12, again here we're taking out, it was very cumbersome to grant an exception by the fire marshal because it was in consultation with the administrator of the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, the program manager of the Governor's Committee on Employment of People with Disabilities, and the Occupational Health and Safety Commission chairman. Way too many people involved in granting the exception. So all those folks were removed, and now the fire marshal may be granted, the exception may be granted for good cause by the state fire marshal for any structure described in subsection A of this section, or by the city for curb ramps. Okay, going on the bottom of, actually it would be the top of the next page, 5 again here, the same change that we made to removing the old accessibility standards and now mentioning that the accessibility and supplemental accessibility requirements will be covered under the provisions of the 2012 International Building Code. Continuing on, now we're at Title 35, basically changing the experience required for a licensed limited technician. The requirements of the two-year experience is an outdated requirement. Basically, there are limited low-voltage technicians, electrical technicians. I think the testimony, there were 13 different licenses, and each one requires a different amount of training or hours. So that is set in the board's rules and regulations. So the 2 years, which is basically 2,000 hours of experience, is really not valid. It ranges anywhere from 80 to 500 hours. So, again, a cleanup there. Going on to the next page, line 6 and 7 and line 9 are part of the same change, just to change the 2 years, get rid of the 2 years and make the minimum experience as required by the board. At the bottom, next change, at the bottom of page 6, we're now at Title 35 changes. This change, the municipalities or counties have been granted enforcement authority under this section, and as such, they can create an appeals board that can determine the suitability of alternate materials and types of construction. However, it came testimony came before us that in a case in Sweetwater County, a problem occurred in that the local boards could not, the county, I believe it was the county attorney, someone decided it couldn't, the board didn't have the authority to interpret or grant variances. So that's all this addition does, is allows the boards to have the same appeal authority as the state board. We're just granting that to the local level.
And do you have a summary of the rest, Senator?
Oh, okay.
Is it about electricians?
The rest, page 7, we're changing department to board.
Yep.
On and also low voltage electrical licenses. I would urge you.
Senator, and thank you for that. And the amendment is also the motion on the floor. Would you like to address the amendment? Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. It has been moved, but we need to present that briefly.
I did address the amendment.
Through the way. Excellent.
Yeah.
Any questions or discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, or excuse me, all those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 166, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We're back on the bill. Any discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 166, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 166 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 182. The reading clerk will read the House bill.
Never more than 10 minutes.
House Bill Number 182, Public Assistance Eligibility, sponsored by Representative Conley.
This is cleanup, too.
It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Pappas, and Scott. No, Senator Hicks and Senator Meyer. Senator Case, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that with a do pass recommendation on House Bill Number 182, Public Assistance Eligibility, and I would ask that you yield to the good senator from Rock Springs. Yes.
Thank you, Senator Case. Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 182 deals with a program we talked about earlier on this floor, and it's the POWER program. And POWER stands for Personal Opportunity with Employment Responsibilities. It's administered through the TANF funds, which is the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. And these are some changes that the department brought to our attention and felt that they could really address the issues far more quickly, easily, fairly with these changes. Changes haven't been implemented in this program since the 1996 welfare reform. So some of the numbers that were going on have been in place since 1996. So they wanted to do three things. The first thing they wanted to do is right now what the statute says is that if there's any change in your eligibility, if you get another job, if you get some increased income, if there's a change in your eligibility, right now it says you have to immediately notify the department. Well, what does immediately mean? You know, is that tomorrow or is that, you know, 3 days from next Tuesday or 2 months from last Friday? We want to change it to something very specific, which is 10 calendar days. The second change is right now the number of vehicles one household, and remember this isn't person, this is household, one household can have that then is exempt from the program eligibility guidelines is one. They can have one. This would increase it to two. And we heard all kinds of stories about reasons why you really want to have at least two. One, I will tell you, is the SNAP program, which is the food stamps, has an unlimited vehicle endorsement. They would like it to be consistent with that, and then all kinds of other reasons that I'm not going to take time to go into right now, but just from one to two. Then the third is to allow people to have savings of up to $5,000. Currently, it's $2,000. And if you remember from our previous discussions of the POWER program, the whole point of this program is to get people off assistance. There's an education requirement. They work with all kinds of personal case managers trying to develop a plan for employment. They want to get these people employed and off the rolls. I'll also tell you that these changes, these numbers weren't just kind of pulled out of the air, like, well, why did you go from two to five? There's an internal working committee manned by DFS people and Department of Workforce Services folks. They're the ones that spent a great deal of time coming up with these numbers and believed this would be the very best. A question was asked in committee about, well, if you say 10 calendar days, which is consistent, and the 10 comes because it's consistent with not only federal guidelines but with all the DFS statutes. But, you know, what if they notify within 10 days, but in the meantime they've already gotten another check? And what they told us is that the system starts processing 5 days before the end of the month. If they get a check, so somewhere and that notification comes in, they do indeed ask for repayment. And they reminded us that if they don't get that repayment, they have a very strong fraud unit. The other thing that was asked in committee that I thought was interesting to share with you was, what kind of people are we talking about? Are these almost all single mothers? Actually, no. 50 to 60% of these individuals are grandparents raising grandchildren. So these are three changes to a statute that hasn't been changed since 1996 that were brought forward by the department. I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Thank you, Senator Kraft. Any discussion? Seeing Senator Meyer, discussion on House Bill 182.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I think we've got a little bit of a problem with this particular one here. If these are all, you know, 50% of them are grandparents, this might be a good interim topic for labor to look at this particular issue, because they only get 60 months worth of benefits. And so they got 5 years. So you got a grandparent that's 60, 65 years old. I don't know, but, you know, they're going to run out of, maybe they'll run out of benefits before they get Medicare or their Social Security. So there could be some time periods in there where you might want to extend that. But, Mr. Chairman, on the other thing, that I'm going to give you guys one number. That's 400. There's 400 households on this particular program right now. And this bill is designed to do one thing. That's to make those 400 households go up in number. I'll bet you that'll be twice that by the time you decide not to be a senator anymore.
Thank you, Senator. Any additional questions or discussion before the proponent rises? Seeing none, Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. I would remind the body that the POWER program is our program that we implement through our TANF funds. They have their own set of rules and procedures. I didn't want to go into a whole lot of it in great detail at this time, but I will tell you that senior citizens are not held to that 60-month rule. That does not apply to senior citizens. So that's not an issue. I will also tell you that one of the things we know about this particular department, our own department, and it's something to be very proud of, is that we know that the number of households, the way this program is administered, is actually the lowest in the country. They're very lean. They're very mean. They work very hard at getting people off the programs. And up to this time, they've had an excellent success record. I would also like to tell you that I'm not sure why we would want an interim topic, because this is a topic that's continuously studied by the departments in question, Family Services and Workforce Services. They have an internal committee that continuously meets, continuously reviews the data, and makes the recommendations. So with that, I would ask for your support of House Bill 182.
Thank you, Senator Kraft. Any additional discussion on House Bill 182, public assistance eligibility? Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want one question. I want to be sure. In the POWER program, it's a personal opportunity with employment responsibility to put people to work, and I heard that. And when I look on page 2, the under subtitle B, they're receiving any public assistance in social services, it says under this article. So is this specifically dealing with a POWER program, or is it more broader than that? That's my question, to include public assistance in social services.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor. Are there any additional questions before the proponent rises? Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. That's all programs. So what happens is their eligibility is based on all the assistance they get. So anything that changes that factor, anything that changes the amount they're going to get, as in, I just got a new job, or I just had a baby, or I just got married, or I just whatever, anything that changes it in any of the programs for which they're receiving assistance, they must notify within 10 calendar days.
Thank you, Senator Kraft. Additional discussion? Question has been called. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 182, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
Oh.
House Bill 182 has passed the Committee of the Whole. That clears the desk. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Mr. President.
have any reports? Well, let's do this. Let's start with, would the reading clerk please read in the committee of the whole report.
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 212, do pass amended. House Joint Resolution 4, do pass amended. House Bill 81, do pass. House Bill 205, do pass. House Bill 228, do pass amended. House Bill 162, do pass amended. House Joint Resolution 1, do pass. House Bill 166, do pass amended. And House Bill 182, do pass. Senator Rothfuss, Chairman.
You've heard the Mr. Chairman, Minority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, I move to the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've all heard the motion. All those say aye.
Aye.
All those say no.
No.
It's adopted. We have signing and enrolled acts. Let's try that. We're getting tired here.
Oh, I got it on.
House Enrolled Act number 66.
House Enrolled Act number 66 being original House Bill 23, an act relating to the next generation science standards.
How unique. They took out the word unique. I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 66 being original House Bill number 23. So signed. House Enrolled Act number 65.
House Enrolled Act number 65 being original House Bill 22, an act relating to motor vehicle registration.
I'm about ready to sign House Enrolled Act number 65 being original House Bill 22. I so sign. So we have messages from the House.
From the House of Representatives, February the 26th, 2015, message number 414, conferees appointed Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, House appointed House conferees to meet with the Light Committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 38. The House conferees are Representative Dan Zwanitzer, Chairman, Representative Limholm and Stubson. From the House of Representatives, message number 411, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, House Bill number 154, Complementary Hunting Licensed Persons with Disabilities. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on a bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 55, noes 1, excused 4. From the House of Representatives, message number 410, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, House Bill number 17, Sexual Assault Protection Orders. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 55, noes 1, excused 4. From the House of Representatives, message number 412, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, Senate file number 46, fire misdemeanors. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 56, no, 0, excused 4. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. You on the move.
That conclude all of our work.
Mr.
That does clear the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 9:30 tomorrow morning, Friday, February 27th.
Announcements. Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, the Conference Committee on message number 334, Senate File 12, Trespassing to Collect Data, will be meeting at 1 o'clock in S1 tomorrow.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet at 8 a.m. in the normal committee room. Discussion within Senate committee on possible joint interim topics.
Majority Floor Leader Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the Senate, your legislative photos are in the Senate leadership secretaries for you to pick up. And also, Mr. President, tomorrow we will have on our schedule to discuss the override of the governor's veto.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Appropriations Committee will hear one last free referral tomorrow at noon on House Bill 235, Foreign Business Entities Reinstatement, at noon.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number one, Judiciary, will meet Friday morning, tomorrow, 8 a.m., room S1, to consider the following bills: House Bill 243, Engrossed Child Abuse; House Bill 215, Community Juvenile Services Board Creation; House Bill 109, Engrossed Felony Unlawful Possession of Controlled Substances; House Bill 211, Post-Conviction Actual Innocence.
Senator Von Bladern.
Thank you, Mr. President. Committee number 9, Minerals Economic Development, will meet about 20 minutes after noon recess tomorrow on S18 to discuss interim topics amongst ourselves before we meet with our counterparts on the other side. And we will be interviewing at least 4 people, 1 person in person tomorrow at 12:30-ish.
Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Your Corporations Committee number 7 will meet tomorrow at 12:30 p.m. in room S19 to conduct a hearing on the governor's appointment of Paul Thomas Gloss for insurance commissioner. Your Conference Committee on House Bill 42, Unclaimed Property Merchant Stored Value Cards, will meet tomorrow at 8 a.m. in S19. And your Conference Committee on Senate File 33, Precinct Committee Person Elections, will meet at 8:30 a.m. in S19.
Thank you. You've all heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Senate shall stand adjourned until 9:30 tomorrow a.m., Friday, February 27th.